Hello everyone, Shannon Gus here, getting you ready for week 5 content for Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. It is a lot this week. We have the recap with Tevin Naidoo, which was a lot of fun, so much to get into this week. And then at around 2 hours and 46 minutes, we have Carla's exit interview. And then at 3 hours, we'll start Teresa's exit interview. So definitely a lot of content this week. Hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
£1 million.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to talk about episode 5, a double elimination, a double tribal council, so much strategy to talk through, and we are going to talk about it all tonight. So first, please welcome in the Mike Bloom to my twist being on the show. It is my co-host, the great Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you?
Oh, look at this. I get to finally be myself for once in this intro.
You were yourself a few weeks ago when you were the Mike Bloom to my Shannon Gus.
Oh, yeah, I guess that is true. But here we are. Yes, another Mike Bloom brain to twist has made its way onto the show. But in true Survivor South Africa season 8 fashion, did not go the way I certainly expected it to. I sort of thought when you give up a choice to compete for sausage rolls or a trip to Immunity Island, the vast majority of people would choose Immunity Island. But of course, when we zig in Survivor South Africa season 8, we tend to zag. And so that was one of many, many choices that we're going to be talking about over the course of this jam-packed episode.
Yeah, maybe because you had Burgos before?
I don't know if they're any different than, you know, I guess they're, I would say, as opposed to like a pork sausage roll we have here in the States. But I guess from what I saw, you know, people talk about this a bit online. It seems like the sausages there are a little differently made. It's not just like a regular pork sausage. It seems to be a different composition. So yeah, I guess I haven't had that specific type.
Yeah, so how can you judge the choice? I mean, look, you're American, I'm a vegetarian, so it's great that we have a guest right now who can provide insights on Burgos roles and maybe also strategy. But look, we'll probably be speaking a lot today about Rob pre-merge characters who we hated to see leave too early. So with that in mind, we brought in this man who was always such a joy to talk to from Survivor South Africa Philippines. It's the great Tevin Naidoo. Tevin, thank you so much for being here.
Shannon, thanks so much for having me. Mike, thanks for having me as well. You know, it's been so long that the last time we chatted, Shannon, you were just Shannon Gates, and now I see you are Miss. A lot has changed.
Yeah. I mean, that was 2 years ago, which was the last South African Survivor season. So yeah, 2 years on, and now we're getting more Survivor, and I've been married for like a year and a half. So it has been a while.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to chat about today's episode.
Before we get into anything, you have to tell us, like, Burgos roles, are they worth it? I mean, I remember from being a kid, but like as an adult, is this what we want?
It's honestly one of my favorite things. When I entered Survivor, they actually ask you before you come onto the show, are there any specific meals you like? And I remember saying, I love Burgos rolls. So when I get voted off, I would like to have that. And the day I got voted out, that was the first thing they gave to me when I exited.
Well, <that's laughs>
so
nice.
Burgos rolls are something that's very important to South Africans.
I mean, another interesting part of this, Shannon, is in the preseason, you and I did ask these contestants, right? Like, what reward or what food would you step out of immunity challenge for? Now, this wasn't exactly that, but this was sort of like a takeoff on that, right? Of, okay, you can compete for immunity or you can compete for food. And look at what all these people did. They competed for food. And granted, it wasn't cereal or biltong or anything like that, but I mean everything looked pretty damn good. And I guess to Tevin's point, like if this was a VIP meal for some of these people, then I guess it makes sense why they went for it.
I mean, we'll definitely talk about that, but I see it as so different because the choice was Immunity Island, and we've spoken all season about how Immunity Island electing to stay is so selfish, but then like electing to go and then stay must be even more selfish, especially when the other thing is not just reward but is like reward for the whole tribe. So I feel like maybe some people wanted to and felt like it would be too bad a look. We'll definitely talk through like the individual decisions, but I didn't mind it for pretty much anyone. There's a couple of people who was iffy for me, but I like it. And that's why I love the twist as well. It wasn't just immunity and reward, which was also great, Mike, but like also that some people were electing to make a decision for the chance to go to Immunity Island to make another decision, like decisionception, which I really love because we obviously love analyzing the choices. But before we get into all of that, Tevin, firstly, what have you been up to in the 2 years since I was Shannon Gates and we spoke, and what's been happening in your life?
Well, a lot's been happening. It's been really cool. I think when I entered Survivor, I was an intern, intern doctor, so was still relatively young. I think I was 24 when I did the show. So I was the youngest castaway except for Katinka at the time. Thereafter, I was in the military for a year. I deleted social media for almost over 2 years. So I've been completely off the grid, learned how to play the guitar, probably read about 1,000 books in that time. So I recently redownloaded social media, but I'm not very active. But I'm doing very well. I'm working in Cape Town and things are going great. COVID's not the best. Mm. So constantly working. I got burnt out a bit at some point, but surviving, literally and figuratively. Not in the game, though.
No, I mean, thank you for, you know, obviously everything you and other frontline workers have done. I cannot imagine, despite the fact that you were able to, you know, keep yourself occupied with reading and playing the guitar, that I would imagine certainly a lot of, you know, the tragedies going on the past couple of years as well have certainly kept, I think, you going to not necessarily make you feel like you need to be drawn back to Instagram anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it's been busy enough for all of us. And I think because I was in the military at the time, once COVID started, I was part of a very proactive team in the city I was living in. I was living in a small city called Oudtshoorn, which is like about 5 hours away from Cape Town. So I was very far away from the bigger cities. And it was interesting, to be part of the military for a bit and be in charge of trying to tackle COVID. So it was quite a fascinating experience.
Yeah, well, I did want to say, because I know that South Africa is absolutely going through it at the moment with another wave, and it's, you know, kind of scary over there and everyone's in lockdown. So I just definitely wanted to like give my thoughts to you as well, because you're on the front line with that. And then also like any of our listeners who are going through it, and the contestants and the team, you know, it's a tough time. And I definitely think like we're going through our own things in the rest of the world, but South Africa, like what I'm hearing from my family and friends, it just feels like it's not a good time. So from my personal lockdown here in Sydney, and like, we definitely want to send our thoughts out to the listeners, and hopefully we give you a little bit of a distraction with all the nonsense we'll talk today, and just send our love to everyone that's going through it in South Africa right now.
Look, I think Survivor and Thursday does give us that distraction, because South Africans, it seem to love Survivor, and Thursdays are the day we most excited for.
So that being said, let's get into that distraction, that form of the guitar playing here, as we sort of send off Carla and Teresa here. Because Tevin, you know, obviously you played on a season that had a pretty chaotic pre-merge as it was. What have been your thoughts about everything going on so far in Survivor South Africa season 8?
Since LaRue and Andre have just taken over the show, it's been getting better and better each time. I think the production of the cast, this cast is so cool. I wish I was playing with these guys. I feel like there's so much going on. There's so many strategic players in the game that it's so difficult for you to just pick one out. And I remember in our season, it was so easy for people to pick out who were the strategic players and thereafter cast them as people who need to go at some point. Whereas in this cast, it's very difficult because they're so diverse and so different. And I just really wish I could have played with these guys.
Yeah, you guys had the chaos, and I guess they have a lot of the versions of you, you know, like the hardcore strategist super fan seems to make up the cast. I mean, I love Philippines so much. Like, that season has such a big piece of my heart for covering it and watching it and just loving it every week. But I'm sure to play it, you know, that was chaotic and not so much fun to be a part of sometimes. But this season, it's like there's so much plans on plans on plans. Like, do you even, like, so Tuba have had a flip every single time. It's gone back and forth like a pendulum. That's a lot. Like, I feel like that was quiet this episode because we spent so much time at Nuna. But, like, they just quietly flipped, and we just expect it because they're chaotic. And we just, you know, it happened in a second. We're like, okay, cool, you flipped again. And then Nuna had so many, like, that was super fandom personified with so many split vote plans and idols and thoughts and everything going on. So it's chaos and, I think, difficulty in its own very different way. And we just see how people try and kind of make their way through it. But I think both probably are really hard to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess maybe we can get like Tuba out of the way here, just because it seems definitely the more straightforward vote, even though to Shannon's point, like, it was a flip. It's wild to say that the flip back to get out Carla was the more straightforward move of the two here, but we've seen a lot of comparisons here, not like direct comparisons, but I think it's safe to say Carla, may she be missed, huge character in the first five episodes of Survivor South Africa season 8. Kevin, you yourself, big character, big player in the pre-merge of Survivor South Africa Philippines. I mean, like, does your heart go out to Carla in this instance? You sort of like understand, you know, the struggle you both go through of just like playing so hard, and then just one vote happens, someone wakes up on a certain day and says, I'm going to vote off this person today and turn on someone, and then it's all over in an instant.
Yeah, I think it is quite, and every time you watch it, you sort of think like about all the similarities that it shares with your own game. It's quite difficult to avoid that comparison. So for me, I really felt it for her because she's right. I think in her post interview, she mentioned that she didn't want to play hard, and then she couldn't help herself. And I know that feeling because that's exactly what happened to me. I got onto this bunker of a ship, planning to just downplay my entire game. But then you see this man in a three-piece suit scaring the hell out of you. And then you suddenly switch off. Your entire game plan just changes, and then you go with the motion. And I think in a tribe or in a game like this where there's so many players playing the game, you have to play hard. Some people are concerned about... I mean, a lot of us are also thinking about maybe one day we're going to do an all-star season. Maybe one day something's going to happen where all the best players are going to come back and play together. So you also don't want to play a cavalier, boring game where you're not really interesting. So I feel for Carla so much. I know what it's like to want to play big early. So it's quite sad to see a big player go away so soon.
Yeah, I mean, the names that were coming up in this episode, I think, so in that tribe, we had Carla, Suntony, and Chappie for the option. I was like, this is painful. And the other tribe was like Kieran, Tyson, and Teresa. Also, I was not having fun with that. So it was going to be a brutal episode. But look, I think Carla, some things, you know, didn't go according to plan. She obviously misread Amy and Sean here. She lost possibly a battle of relationships to Suntony and to a degree possibly Chappie's. But like, to a point, there's collateral damage for her and Wada just being that.
Don't say that word, Shannon. We've heard it so many times over the course of this episode.
Well, now it's like in my head, so I'm going to have to bet you. And now I'm going to say it a lot, but like not on purpose. Don't feel like I'm doing it on purpose. But like, they are a threatening pair. They do have connections to this, you know, other Vunicide and possibly other allies. And I think for the Zumba three in the middle and Suntony, who at this point is basically OG Zumba, like they have obliterated that tribe. They come through now, they're 3 of 6 with, you know, three other ones and Suntony working with them. They've done it perfectly, I think. Swinging from back to forth, pinning two sides that were already against each other, just letting them go at each other. And here it makes a lot of sense to me, yes, to like break it up even more. So while, you know, you can point out little mistakes, I just think the fact that she was playing with other good players and it just was a good move in a series of good moves for the Zumba 3 that have maybe gone a little missing in our commentary because we're always kind of focusing on other different mistakes, you know, Amy's lie and her decision and Anella last week with the thrown vote. They have been playing really well. The voting structure is perfect. And the Carla vote was just the next one of that, I think.
Yeah, I talked about this last week, but I think, you know, again, maybe I'm counting my chickens here. I think we can officially declare like a victory for Amy,
yeah,
Anella, and
the
Sean.
Flag down that they won.
Yeah, they were down 6-3, and now they're 3-3, and basically
3-1,
like
1-1,
I think,
really.
Yeah, exactly. Like I do not think, and that's another advantage of getting rid of Carla over Warda here, is because I really don't see Warda and Chappie's working together at any point. I think, Tevin, you know, you can speak firsthand, especially with the Martinez, you know, reference you invoked before about how sometimes when you just have personality conflicts, it's really tough to overcome that, to work together strategically. And I feel like even if, you know, Suntony is really close with those two, I don't think even she has the power to have those three work together and force a tie. Now, look, maybe the Zumbas are not completely a steadfast trio. There was a secret scene this week where Amy talks about how she was pretty miffed that Anella threw the vote away last week and didn't tell her. But for all intents and purposes, I'm ready to say that like these three former Zumba members now have control on this new tribe, which is wild to say, again, considering they were basically outnumbered 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to go to tribal council 3 more times, I would expect them to be the last three. even though, again, there is that small divide, even though Santini last week did say, I'm splitting up Paul and Chappies now, next week Carla and Wada, so tick that off the list. And then she said Amy and Smash. So if she ends up doing that, I'll be really impressed with that. If there is that little bit of risen of something negative going on that she can make more out of, that would be her finest work yet. I don't know how she's going to do that. Maybe that's their only real threat, because otherwise, like, this three have got it done. And I'm really impressed with the number three. They have won this. Kevin, how have you been? You know, again, as someone who, like, was so involved in kind of leading the strategy of a pre-merge, how have you seen especially that core three move through these few episodes?
I mean, yeah, I think they're doing it perfectly. And you can see that Sean has also sort of downplayed his game during the game. But when he gets to tribal council, he still tries to stir the pot as much as he can, the way he talks to the other tribe, the way he interacts with people. So I think they're forming such a tight-knit group while everyone else is just fracturing. And I always say that the Survivor's game of numbers, you have to have a group of people who you can sort of give some trust to and take that as far as you can. I think that the three of them are going to move far better in this game with the fact that everyone else is just fracturing one by one. So they've put themselves in a perfect position to control the game. And Anela specifically, I feel like he's going under the radar now at this point, to a point where he's the type of person who I think can control the game if he gets far enough. So it's interesting to see the dynamics of this tribe at the moment.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Sean side of things, because he has been sort of missing, I think, from the past couple of episodes. I feel like we saw stuff from Amy's perspective, a bit of Anela's. Sean's been a little bit of an enigma until this episode where, yeah, to your point, Tevin, like, he comes into tribal council and does the whole, like, I can't believe we're watching this happen. And of course, he's providing the good TV, right, with saying, oh, yeah, they're going to be on the jury anyway, so I'm glad they're getting in practice. But the thing that really surprised me, and I know you talked about this in your exit interview with Carla, Shannon, is this Sean-Carla relationship. And specifically, in her day after video, Carla basically talking all this stuff about Sean's game, right, saying that Sean wheedles his way into getting to know you at your core, and how, you know, he's proved himself to be invaluable as a provider and is dangerous. I just feel like we hadn't seen that from Sean, and that makes me excited, because look, I think in the preseason and even in the first episode, I think all of us were like, oh great, this is a due to ticking time bomb, let's see how long he lasts in the pre-merge. But it sounds like he's got a lot more skill than I think even the show itself is showing him to have.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of it. We've seen some of it, and we saw the most of it in this episode with his secret relationship with Carla. Also, she mentioned to me and was in that same secret scene, Mike. I mean, this was such a pivotal secret scene. It was them all coming back from the last tribal council, and I hate that that was missing from the episode, because it was so important about, like, they really made Chappie feel like it was just a Paul thing, like, not about the two of them, which maybe informed some of his decision not to play for Immunity Island. So things like that I think are important and probably were true. I mean, they did end up voting with him. So I think it was really important to know that. We see all the fallout from the throne vote with Smash, as we mentioned. Then Sean says that something about Paul eating the two other future life bars, and it cuts to Smash, who ate the two future life. How can we forget? Again, incredible branding that we're still talking about that this is, like, still a strategic thing. And Carla mentioned in her ex interview with me that Sean had lied about that had been Paul who had done that, and that had been, like, one of the reasons they'd voted him out. So that seems quite pivotal. Like, that's good gameplay from Sean. If we're not seeing a lot of it, maybe the issue is a lot of the places we see him is tribal council. Maybe Sean shouldn't speak at tribal council. That seems to be, like, you know, the worst parts of his game. As we saw in episode one, it was a lot. And in this episode, you know, to call the other tribe the enemy and put up that divide when they have more numbers than you is bad math, Sean. And maybe bad just anyway to create such a divide. He's obviously feeling emotional about the machete being taken, but that to me was a miss in otherwise an episode of hits for Sean. And I guess, yeah, he's doing so much more than we thought, which is great because I love him as a character.
I think not having a machete and losing some of your equipment at camp can quite be a downer for mood. It is quite disappointing when you have less and someone's actually taken that away from you.
But from our couches, we're saying, like, think it, but don't say it. Like, it must be hard, but, like, bad strategy to vocalize that to them when, again, they have more numbers than you and they therefore will have the power at the merge at this point.
Yeah, Kevin, what do you think about the shenanigans that happen at Tribal Council? Because, again, you have dealt with some people that maybe are known to like fly off the handle more at Tribal Council, whereas some people play it a bit close to the vest. I mean, when you look at stuff that Sean does that make him someone that you would want to work with personally if you were in the game, considering how open he seems to be at Tribal Council specifically?
Yes, I think I would, because I think it's nice to work with someone who takes that target off your back. I mean, I always said that Martinez would be the perfect person to take to the end of the game, because he takes so much from you, away from you. Because it's always disappointing, because I remember when I got voted off, there were only four people left in the tribe, and I was one of them. I always considered, if I'm ever at four people towards the end of the game, it's always going to be me going home at some point. So I must have an individual immunity. So it's quite disappointing to know I didn't get that. So having a player like Sean around who's at least compass mentis and can think and a bit more logically to not express your gameplay, but to still annoy the enemy, that's the perfect type of person you want to actually have around you as a shield.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that's intentional necessarily that he's trying to be people's shield. But then again, I don't think I knew a lot of points of his game before this episode. But I do think that as being part of that Zumba 3, that they have all been doing well. So it must have been good. And we're hearing as well, you know, Anella with the throne vote, Carl and Warda were saying, we're going to be a four with Sean and Amy. So they really did get in there strategically in the middle. I thought Amy was great this episode too. I feel like she's the one really having to talk to Carla and Warda. And she goes back to Santini and gives that information, kind of fuels the fire a little more. I do assume that Chappies was safe anyway, because she's like, they mentioned Chappies, obviously I'm not doing it. They mentioned you. Like she, I think the ball was already well rolling against Carla and definitely like the Carla Warda side. But she just stoked the flames, and they explicitly say Carla and Warda that they trust her more than Santini at a point. So I think as well, like without the distraction as we've had in the last two episodes of a decision we didn't like, of a lie we didn't like, none of that this episode, just like pure good strategy.
Let's talk about the Santini side of things though, because I agree, like the Zambas made a great move here, continue to fracture the former Vuna stuff. But I'm ready to declare Santini the captain of the sinking ship that is the Tuba tribe, right? Because
maybe
because again, from
them
this,
Tuba.
I think from this edit perspective. Yeah, exactly. From this edit perspective, though, it really does seem like, once again, Santini is the one who is making this decision. And I know that, you know, we're talking about this episode, not last episode, but I invoked the comparison, Kevin, with your situation last time of what Santini did with Paul as to sort of what PK does with you, of how randomly one day you just say, all right, I'm going to take out one of my close allies here. And now we see that, to Shannon's point, Santini's keeps pulling off this you know singular swing vote plan of just breaking up all the pairs. What do you think about this? Is this good for her?
Yeah, like, so that's the type of player I would actually avoid aligning with.
The one that just wakes up one day and wants to take someone out randomly. I don't know why you would say that.
I mean, as much as I love her character, she's probably an amazing person, but you can see how easily someone could easily just say something that she doesn't agree with and she'll immediately switch on you. So, and you see from the next episode that she has a new arch nemesis. I'm not sure what's going to happen there, but she clearly has switched on someone else. So yeah, that's the type of player I would, it's almost like dealing with a Martinez who can easily just switch on you in a matter of seconds.
I would say with Santini that none of it feels emotional to me. Like where other players that we're mentioning, it can feel all emotionally driven. But for Santini, I don't know what's going to happen next week, but it's felt all extremely strategic. Even in this episode, again, I think it was always the plan, but her name does get mentioned. So whether it's like an intuition or just a good killer instinct for people that will eventually go against her too, like she gets the jump on them. I think she's in a similar spot to OG's, like the three Zumbas, in that she, you know, she wasn't super connected to old Vuna, so she split it up. She's put herself in a power position, got herself at least to the most important of the old Vunas on that tribe, if not possibly working her way up more, making new relationships, splitting up power couples when she felt she didn't have a pair. I mean, she wrote herself a list and she's currently ticking things off that list. Like, I'm so impressed with that execution. And I don't think I disagree with the move. Like, as we've said, this the same reasons is good for Zumba. It's good for her too. She's not going to take out Chappies. I think she's much closer to Chappies, and she still has left Chappies with only her, no other alliance in Paul. And now she'll go back and Warda might have to cling to her too. Like I have no fault with anything she's doing.
I am fine with what she did now, given that she voted out Paul last week, right? I think I'm still trying to figure out if this whole I was a minion thing from last week was actually valid. But given the fact that she does go along and vote out Paul here, I agree that Carla was the fine move here, considering that, again, I don't know if she realized this or not, but Carla was coming after her, right? We do get a brief conversation. They do eventually decide to vote out Chappies, but they're briefly like, hey, I'm not feeling good about Saint-Denis. There's a good chance that if Chappies gets voted out here, Saint-Denis might be next. Now, that being said, I think Saint-Denis not necessarily doing herself any favors in that, like, now I do think she has ceded control over to the Zambas as much as she feels like she's been in a position of power. I think now these three are going to be the arbiter of her fate. And if they decide that, hey, we don't want her anymore, let's get rid of her, they certainly can. But again, let's go back to what we talked about last week. There is this idol that is in play, but for some godforsaken reason has yet to be found by anybody on that tribe. I still do think that, again, part of the reason why Saint-Denis is playing with fire, Kevin, I know you mentioned before, they're like, okay, if I make four, I have to have some version of immunity here. Saint-Denis kind of does. She doesn't exactly have her hands on it, but she basically does feel like, okay, I have an ace in the pocket here in the form of an idol that if I feel in danger, I could pull out at any time.
So strange that I haven't found the one by the well, because the well is the area everyone generally searches immediately. It's the one place you want to search thoroughly to make sure you find something. So yeah, I completely agree. It's surprising that they haven't found it.
Yeah, we did get the question, the requisite that we'll get every week. How does Saint-Denis still not have idols in her hands? Either one, the one from Tribal Council 2, which no one's gotten clues for. It seems like maybe she's been given an out with that, which is something I don't like. We can talk about that with Immunity Island. Yeah. But I mean, for Saint-Denis, if she gets rid of, again, I don't think she can get rid of Chappies here. Like, he's probably her closest relationship. Possibly she's given over power to Zamba, but then if she takes out Chappies, then it's like a pair and a three and her. Maybe she's a swing vote in that way in some capacity, but it's still, it's like a lot of things now. It's more broken up, and as an individual player, maybe more kind of groups that you can pull from. And we'll talk about this with the other tribe, but there's only going to be so many tribal councils until maybe a swap or a merge. Probably more tribal councils for this tribe that's going to just probably keep on losing. But you only need to get to a certain point. And we'll talk about, like, Kieran. I think that's what he's trying to do. It's like doing the math of, okay, but how many tribal councils do I need to really get through before a change in the game? For someone like Saint-Denis, who does have the more important relationships, who does have shields, who does have people who are going against each other, who does have some power, and then possible idols, I think she probably thinks that is enough. And I think that coming from where she did, it's still really impressive. But Mike, when you say that you're happier about it now because she took out Paul's, like, how are you relating those things to each other?
Well, I think it's more so that, like, okay, you know, because she was still in a comfortable position with Paul and Chappies. Now it's like, okay, with Paul gone, I could understand why she has to continue with that plan, right? Like, I'm still thinking, why did she need to create that list in the first place? But now that she's carried through with the plan, there are no half measures.
Right.
Like you said, like, if she voted out Chappies, then it's like this 3-2-1 thing. And she's not exactly in that position of power. So it's like, all right, you went down this path. There's no turning back at this moment. You might as well keep going. And yeah, I'm still mystified by the fact that we got her plan in a confessional. To your point, Shannon, two things accomplished, one thing to go. But man, if she is able to pull off somehow breaking up Amy and Anella next week, like, she is a miracle worker.
Yeah. But in the confessional, she's like, maybe I'll do that. Like, I don't think she seemed as committed to that one, because that would be a lot. If she does that, I don't know, my hat will be off. And I don't think anything's beyond her at this point, other than reaching into some bamboo with tribal council and taking Nile out. That's the one thing.
Just grab the idol, Saint-Denis.
Yeah, that's just her kryptonite, just actually getting idols in her hands. But everything else she's got on lock. Should we talk about Nuna, that took up so much of the time, despite being really a vote for the outsiders, you know, a vote, this one, again, a huge flip, huge power player going home, that one, a lot of detail about which minority member is going to get out of the game, and that's where we got a lot of time, and that's actually what we have the most to talk about, so I feel like we should give Nuna their due, their Juna, in talking about it.
Yeah, so we, up these past couple of weeks, right, we were like, okay, this is the dynamic. It's just like the new Zamba tribe, right? There's three majority. There's three in the minority. And then there's three outsiders. And they're going to be sort of like jumping for their votes. No, that was not the situation.
Yeah, it's your assumptions based on very little are wrong. You just assume everything is right.
I mean, we saw basically nothing of this tribe in a major capacity for the past couple weeks. And we got Nuna overload here. I will personally admit, while I was watching this episode, I got a literal headache watching all this Nuna stuff happen. And it's not like because it was so incredibly complex, like you said, Shannon, like it really was a very straightforward vote at the end of the day. Just so much happened between everything with Teresa and the idol note bluff, between Tyson, you know, coming clean about his idol, to then Kieran suggesting to have the vote split on him, to then Tyson purposely drawing votes to play the idol on himself, which is just a completely unique plan in and of itself. There was just so much that happened on the Nuna tribe that, like, it really set my head spinning, especially those first 5 minutes, right, where we open up the episode and it's Inesu and Teresa, and Teresa's like, great, I'm glad to work with you. By the way, give me the note so that I can then fabricate this idol so then I could get your trust. I was like, what is going on?
It was previously on. They were like, they pulled in Teresa. We're like, did they? When? Where?
Yeah. So that we should also explain, yeah, there's now a couple of extended scenes that went up. I know we talked to LaRue about it. He said that Tyson-Teresa scene obviously is very vital to this episode, but for time's sake, couldn't be included in previous episodes. So he just kind of like snuck it in there. I do encourage people to check out the extended scenes if you can, because I believe their conversation happened, I think, right before the tribe raid last episode. And so you see Teresa talking to Tyson being like, yeah, I want to work with you, which is really going to like set the table for everything that happens this episode.
Yeah, but Tevin, were you as confused as we were for parts of this, or were you kind of understanding what was happening with this tribe?
I just felt like so much happened in this episode. It felt as if I was watching a longer episode than usual. But yeah. It's definitely because the challenge was so short, and then all the strategy was just so long. It was a lot to take in. But I was also excited because I figured this is the perfect episode for us to discuss.
Yeah, it was a lot of strategy, a lot of stuff about, you know, splitting the vote. And we can get into like the nitty gritty of it, but I kind of want to talk about it, you know, person to person, as we often do. And I want to start with who I see as far and away, like when I'm thinking about my chizzy points, there was a lot of people to consider. I think a lot of people played really well. I think I could give out 3-2-1s for both tribes, but there's a three here that is just miles ahead for me. And it is Kieran. Like, I thought Kieran was so brilliant in this episode. It was the kind of strategy that was like, it's like thrilling to me, and it's like not loud and like bombastic, it's just quiet and great, and I loved it so much. I mean, the fact that even before we get to plans, he's ingratiated so well that they're talking about strategy and he's in the conversations, like he's part of the group. I'm like, do they realize that Kieran is there as they're like talking amongst their like OG Zamba people? Even when they talk about the split votes, they're like, we'll put, you know, three on, three girls, three guys, like he's that third guy, which is also insane to me. And then he gives his plan, he lays out the split vote plan. He offers himself up as a contingency plan, which is straight out of Harry Hills's playbook from Australian Survivor All-Stars, which a lot of people on the season watched. When Harry did it, Harry had a real risk. Like, Harry was doing this the episode after Matt Rogers played an idol, notorious idol finder. Like, he probably could have another one. That was real risk versus reward. This, based on Kieran's amazing read, was no real risk. Like, he knows Tyson's going to play it. He has correctly read that Teresa probably doesn't have one, but he can have all of the gratitude of putting himself out there, really, really ingratiating himself with the majority, getting his whole plan played out like him, having all the agency in the plan where his votes could decide it, he could do what he wants. And even better, I feel. At first, I was like, why aren't you making them put 4 votes on Teresa? Your ally could save his idol. He needs to flush the idol more than anyone, because a couple of weeks ago, I said, if Tyson has it, that could not be good for his allies. They might go home on a split. They might go home, you know, in case they can't vote for Tyson. Like, here's your person to vote for in Kieran. And now there is fodder in case anyone gets sent to Immunity Island. If Inesu comes back with something or gets sent again, you have some real shields to get you to the next phase of the game. And he made that all happen from behind like a puppeteer. And that's what I love when I watch Survivor. You just watch the brain work and the wheels turn, and loved it so much.
Welcome to the season, Kieran. I think he was just very much in the shadows up until this episode, right? Like, from an edit perspective, I feel like we've barely seen anything of him, especially in comparison to his other two, you know, cohorts in Tyson and Inesu, who I feel like have just been a much larger part of the season. But I completely agree here. I think it is so interesting what he was able to do. First, like you said, like, optics matter, and the fact that he was in that conversation that one morning, right, with like Rainier and Dino and Nicole and Marisha, just shows like how well ingratiated he was already, to the point where, like, if I may make assumptions, if we're going off like a pecking order here, I would imagine he's obviously above Teresa. He might be above Keon, and depending on connections, right? Like, Kieran seems to have made this connection with Rhaenyra in particular, and considering how Rhaenyra seems to be one of the people calling the shots on this tribe, that's a very good sign for his longevity on this particular tribe, that he's basically like, all right, let me sacrifice maybe some short-term power in possibly, you know, having my and Tyson's votes be the only ones that matter, versus, okay, if I worm my way into this right now and get with Rhaenyra, that's going to do much better for my portion of the game. I also really like this plan. Like you said, it's risky, but is it though? Because here's the thing. Yes, this is modern Survivor. Advantages are plenty, but Teresa, who we're going to talk about a lot, I think, unfortunately, with a lot of the misplays she did in this episode, the way she was coming across from my perspective, pretty much 100% confirmed she doesn't have an idol. And so I do think that while Kieran, I think, is creating this spectacle, right, of like, hey, if two idols get played, then I go here. I don't really think he was in any danger.
No.
Because I think Teresa was pretty much like sending off these big red flags. She was a red flag factory of, I don't have an idol. You can vote for me just fine. So Kieran basically said, great, I can have my, you know, my sausage rolls and eat it too.
Burovos. You're going to have to say Burovos one time on this podcast.
Burovos? Is that right?
I don't even think I'm probably butchering it too. That was also a pun.
Yeah. Now, last time we were on, Kevin did correct my own mispronunciation of South African terms. I'm glad we're two for two here. But he essentially got the both benefits here, in that he was able to, like, you know, really show I'm willing to put my neck on the line for the sake of this tribe. While also, in my opinion, not really put himself in danger. Certainly not compared to what we saw from Harry in that example you provided, Shannon.
Yeah, that's the best kind of risk-reward. You know, one that is not a risk, and then it's all reward. But Tevin, were you on the same page with how Kieran was doing here?
Yeah, completely, 100%. But I think that's exactly why this plan is so much better than it actually is. It's because Kieran is, first of all, close to Tyson. So he probably knows the fact that Tyson gave her the clue to do what she did. The note to do what she did. So he has access to information that nobody else has. And you can see how paranoid people like Dino are regarding her possibly having it, because nobody wants to be the victim of the votes just being one vote against you and then you go home. But Kieran knows this. He has this information. So he knows he's not even in a risky situation and still has the mental capacity during that tough time while you're stuck on that island to think up a plan where he's a strategy consultant. So there's clearly some strategy consulting that went on right there. That was a very good move. I think he also, for me, was the standout of this episode. My 3 points would also probably go to him at some point, but we can discuss that later.
Spoilers
but,
for the chizzy.
Sorry, but best move of this episode.
And we should also remember that, Kieran was the one to suggest to Tyson to go to Rhaenyra and tell about the idol as well. Like, it's just so interesting how Kieran was the one that I think was directing a lot of these votes. You know, you have Rhaenyra have this confessional being like, I'm the only one with a view of the entire puzzle, which I think is accurate from both tribes' perspective. But I think to Tevin's point, I think if you're specifically talking about Nuna, I think Kieran's actually the one who's most in the know here. Despite the fact that you might think that he is not in as much of a power position as Rhaenyra, I think he definitely knows the most, considering that, as Tevin pointed out, like, he basically not only knew everything going on with Tyson, but actually directed Tyson to do things this episode.
But that's what you can get from being in the minority, is like that extra information. I was talking about that with my brother, and he was saying like, this was the perfect like werewolf or mafia move. From if you're in the mafia, like you're in the minority, but you have all the information because you're in the mafia. This is like when you throw another mafia member under the bus to try and, you know, seem less sus to the majority, which makes a lot of sense because you have the information to do that. And then you can try and make those bonds. So, I mean, I really did love it from him. There's so many things you could go on about. I mean, the fact that, so they end up having the power here. We'll talk about, you know, the decision that they made. But Kieran and Tyson are the two votes for Teresa. If they vote for, you know, Nicole, she goes home. And that's definitely a debate that we'll get into. But even the fact that they were given that opportunity, to me, like, the read of the majority is correct. So you have to credit them on that. Someone like Rhaenyra, that they're not going to be worth... Well, I mean, the majority think that Teresa has a vote, so they still have a tie. But even then, just not even thinking that the three of them will come up against them. That could be risky, but their read is correct. Credit to them on that. But so much credit to Kieran, because if I'm a majority and I've got five people and three people on the outs, that's not enough numbers to split the vote. You know, like, then you're, that's why they have to rely on these minority members to be part of the split, at least one, because you need at least six there. So what I would be doing, if I wanted to be really safe, if I'm like Dino and I'm really, really scared and Idol's coming, I'm voting for Edgardo. And Edgardo in the situation is Kieran. He's the only minority member that you're not scared has an idol. And the fact that that wasn't an option, the fact that we didn't hear his name from the, like, early on, Dino's like, maybe we split on Tyson and Kieran, probably because Kieran is the most wide open without an idol. But the fact that that never came to fruition, and they'd rather split the vote with minority members and possibly give them some control, yes on the read, but more yes to Kieran just completely controlling all of that. With that in mind, and the fact that he and Tyson did have the two votes that could decide it, maybe they probably didn't even know that was going to be true, because they would have needed to know that Teresa couldn't vote. But let's play theoretically. Had they known, or had they even just gotten Teresa on side and been like, the three of us are going to do this, what do you think about throwing Teresa under the bus, Mike, versus, you know, actually taking out one of the majority here?
Right. So this is, I think, the biggest question people have for these two guys is, you have this idol to play. Your votes are the ones that counts. I think that's certainly a reason why Tyson tells everyone at Tribal Council, put the votes on me. I think he wants his votes to matter probably more than anyone else's. And he says, let's take out Teresa instead of like a Rainier or a Nicole or a Marisha, someone who you know, is a power player within the group. From a TV perspective, that would be amazing.
That would be fireworks.
But from a long-term perspective, I would not like that decision personally. And I think the reason for me is that, look, the hidden immunity idol has added so much to the game, but very, very rarely are people successfully able to use it to break up a majority, right? Especially pre-merge. Like, I think back to what Russell and Parvati were able to do in Heroes versus Villains. Maybe as an example, you could argue Kelly Wentworth playing her idol and taking out Andrew Savage might be another example. But that's two in like the so many idol plays that happen. What usually happens most of the time is what happens with the three amigos in Survivor Karamoan, where they make this big spectacle. They play the idol of, oh, only our votes matter. Let's take out a big player. Bye bye, Philip. And then the next episode, they get turned on. Because the thing about hidden immunity idols is, yes, they provide this big gotcha moment, but still, this is a numbers game. And if you don't have the numbers and you don't have an idol, like, you're basically SOL at that moment. And so that all that is to say that if they take out a power player in the Zomba majority in this episode, it doesn't mean they're out of the woods. If anything, like, they're going to get the ferocity of the majority, which is going to be solidified against them. The best they could really hope for is a 4-4 tie next episode by swinging over Teresa. But Teresa, unfortunately, did not do herself any favors in this episode by essentially showing like, yeah, I'm not really with anybody. I can sort of just flip wherever I want to and, you know, sell out whoever I want to just to keep myself safe in this game. It's not really a guarantee to them. Maybe not like a Survivor Samoa, right? Where it's like, okay, if we take out this person and then we can keep Shambo with us and be a solid five. Teresa's not necessarily a solid four there. So look, I would have loved in the moment if had they sort of taken out one of these big people, I'm going to take out Nicole and deprive her of her second portion that she won in the reward challenge.
That would be amazing.
As she sits down. But at the same time, like, I don't think that would have been good for their game, because if anything, that would have all but guaranteed the three of them would be the targets at the next tribal council. Here, there's a little more wiggle room that they may have just like wormed their way into the majority here.
I think that's exactly the conversation that they had, because you could see Tyson tell Kieran, because now we're thinking about us. And that's the reason why they go to Rainier to talk to him, because they're obviously set up a plan now to try and at least make ties with this other tribe and ensure that they're safe in the future. So that conversation between the two of them where they sat on the beach, I think that it must have been a lot more detailed than they showed us.
Yeah, there did seem to be something of a shift, because as you said, they literally say it, now we're thinking about us and not Teresa. So, I mean, once they lose trust with her, I think that is completely done. If you're going to go into a best case scenario 4-4, you best be super tight against people who've been together since day one who are really mad at you. So that's done. I mean, I'm kind of interested in where the decision stood for the small amount of time before that kind of big break between the boys and Teresa. Yeah, I mean, I think that that would be a pretty easy one for me to be like, well, she snubbed us in some way, like, I'm out. Because as you were saying, Mike, like, it's a good plan anyway to throw her under the bus, not only because, yes, short-term uphill battle through this whole, you know, pre-merge, uphill battle through the whole game. Like, look at what's happening on the other tribe. Zumba just came in as a 3-6, and they're in control. They're in control on this tribe. Zumba is the power structure right now. The best you can do is cling on for dear life and hope to kind of make it through it at a later point in the game. But I think, like, starting a war against OG Zumba for the next few votes, difficult. In the whole game, probably really, really difficult. It probably does go the way of the Three Amigos in general. Where you become like this fun little underdog team that we root for sure, but it's not long for the game. So I would definitely agree with it. And I think that I don't know what they were considering in terms of when that was a real option with Teresa to really work with her. I don't know if maybe like Tyson was more into it than Kieran, who seems like a little bit more ingratiated with the tribe. I'm not really sure how those discussions went, but I think the second any trust was lost with Teresa, and we'll definitely talk about her part in that. But I think once that split happened, you have to be like, well, you know what? This was probably the right move anyway, and just go with it. And I completely commend that decision.
So, Tevin, I mean, let's sort of look ahead here, because what do you think about the prospects? We talked about, I think we're all sort of in agreement that this is the better move for the longevity of particularly Tyson and Kieran. Do you think they're going to be longer for this game now, or do you still think they're going to be facing this uphill battle if this tribe goes back to Tribal Council again?
I think it is quite difficult because you also see that Teresa, they searched everyone's bags. I mean, that's so when Anesu finds out about that, you can tell that she's also quite concerned, and she wasn't in the picture during this whole decision. So she probably just comes back to Tribal Council and sees all this chaos happening. So it's intriguing in the sense that she's also someone who's involved in this whole issue, but had nothing to do with this. It wasn't really a blindside, but I would say the fact that Teresa goes home, I think overall it's the better plan, because Teresa is someone who has a great sense of awareness. I mean, she easily narrates what's going on in the game very well, but she's not putting that into practice whenever she's talking to the people. I mean, you see how she approaches the three girls in the, I think it was the second episode, or was it the first? Yeah. I can't remember. And she's the one trying to call the shots in that case. And you can't do that. I mean, when you are on the bottom, you have to sort of have that humility. You have to show people that you are concerned and you do need their help. And people love that. They want to feel that way. So I think in this case, when Teresa sort of flipped on Tyson, well, she didn't really flip, but when she exposed that information, at that point, you already know this person has less social skills in the way she's interacting with people. At that point, it's better to probably leave her.
Yeah, I mean, it's a marriage of convenience as well. And Teresa said in her exit with me that Anesu had been a little bit of a bridge between them. And clearly that gap kind of widened without her, which is like, I think the classic kind of Anesu position to be in. That's probably like her yoga pose. Is there a bridge in yoga?
Yeah, there is a bridge.
Yeah, that's hers. That's what she is. She's always the bridge. That's the yoga.
I mean, that's the other interesting thing as well is, again, this might contribute to the continuing uphill adventures of these three, is an idol has been flushed. We don't know if another one's going to be hidden in the same spot or anything, but, you know, there's a chance they might be able to find it. But now Anesu and these guys in particular have this tribal council pass, right? So here's also another situation where if they're able to get like one more person on their side, they can use this if they need to. And then all of a sudden they go from 4 out of 8 to 4 out of 7. And they have the majority. So it's this thing. It's sort of like David versus Goliath, right? Where like they are the Davids, but they are holding all these advantages that are somehow able to have them survive as a small group week after week.
That's so fun. That's a fun idea to think that they could kick someone out instead of just like using it to protect themselves, you know, like the Jeremy Collins move, which I totally get, just using it like immunity, which is, I guess, what staying and playing does give you. And she's kind of got that. But she can kick someone else like Chappies can with his immunity. That would be hilarious. You know, like Luke did that to Baden. And it is always funny to be like, you're out, just evict someone from Tribal Council. So yeah, they definitely have some tricks up their sleeves. I do think it's a hard run. I think it's especially hard for people who aren't Kieran. I think Kieran's bought himself some time. I think best case scenario, they're probably not going to lose many more immunity challenges. Is there going to be another swap? Will they merge sometime soon now that they're down to 14? I think that there's some breathing room there, but look, they're up against it. It's hard. They were in a desperate position and they were working with that. What about Tyson in this? Because I think like pros and cons for Tyson, like I think him trying to pull votes at Tribal made him seem really out of the loop, because that was already the plan. So I'm like, how much of this are you aware of? Because you are getting the majority of votes. Like, that's where we're at. It's either going to be you or Teresa as you want. Maybe he's like trying to protect Kieran, but Kieran's like already all over that. So I thought that was a little skittish, but then obviously he played the idol. He saved himself. He created something with Rhaenyra, which was good. So pros and cons for me.
Yeah, Tevin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because I still have no idea how to feel about what Tyson was doing this episode.
I think he has the idol. He knows he's safe. He knows he's going to play it. And I think when you're sitting there and you can kind of tell people are going to vote for you, at some point you want to let people know you're not afraid, or you've got something to show. So I think him asking for them for the votes to come onto him is also a good way to show them that he has a move that he wants to play and that he's playing this game. But yeah, the fact that, as Shannon mentioned, that Kieran already had that all sorted shows that there was some sort of he wasn't aware of what was going on. What I really am concerned about, though, is that I think if Anesu shares this information with Tyson and Kieran, they can probably plan a really good blindside together. If she tells them about her advantage in the game, because Kieran is so close to the rest of the tribe, himself, Tyson, and Anesu can do something really cool. So I really hope that that's something that happens.
Yeah, me too. Again, the other thing is, and we saw this, you know, on the other tribe, that these Vuna people are not necessarily about sticking together, that they're very self-interested. So we'll see. It could very easily be a situation where for some reason Anesu comes back and is like, nope, I'm keeping this for myself. And we talked about this when Tyson found the idol, right? Of how likely is he to use it for the group versus use it for himself? I think maybe to your point, Shannon, one of the reasons why Kieran wanted the idol to be flushed is because he felt that Tyson would use it on himself. Yeah, but I'm still really unsure about this. I mean, good on Tyson for successfully corralling people to vote for him. But the question is,
did he do that? I mean, that was the plan. They voted exactly how they were meant to vote.
Right. Rhaenyra says in that confessional, right? He says, like, oh, it's all part of the plan. So I'm not sure why this, like, hurry up whisper thing going on at tribal council. Like, no, you got to vote for me.
No one acted out of what we thought they were going to do based on what happened in tribal council.
And also now the genie's out of the bottle with tribal council whispering, right? It took them 5 episodes, but considering how hyper modern this season is, this is not going to be the last time we see whispering at tribal council. I think we can bet on that.
But do you know what's more modern than tribal whispering? Useless tribal whispering that actually fulfills nothing, but looks really cool and crazy in the moment, but actually, like, they just did what they were going to do and just achieved nothing. I feel like that is indicative of modern survival.
Yeah, that's actually very true as well, right? It's like all spectacle, all sizzle, no steak.
Exactly.
In that regard. See, I'm you know, obviously I think the optimal thing would have been get the votes on Teresa and Tyson doesn't have to play the idol. Teresa said as much in your exit interview, right? She's like, I'm actually, the biggest blindside for me was the fact that Tyson actually played his idol here successfully. I mean, maybe there's something about engendering trust, right? What Kieran said of, like, Tyson approaches Rhaenyra and is like, cards up, I have an idol, I'm going to play it here. You know, it's almost like this is a curse that I need to get rid of. And so I guess from that perspective, if these two guys are sort of like competing to get into the breast pocket of someone like Rhaenyra, this helps Tyson. But at the same time, like, you know, now he's really drawn eyes onto himself for someone who can find idols, for someone who can, like, certainly make these big moves. He's trying. I really admire the effort for him to be like, look, I'm going to be honest here. Let's get the idols out of the way. I'm working with you guys. But it just feels like he certainly has more eyes on him than Kieran at this point, even with the stuff he was trying to do.
Yeah, he might be they might be competing for, like, a battle of loyalty right now, but I just feel like Kieran is so far ahead, because I think it seems like Tyson got to a little later. Like, he felt alienated from the conversations. We see Kieran is in the conversations. Then when they fully cut bait with Teresa, that's when Kieran suggests to him, like, go to Rhaenyra, and they seem to make a good bond. And I thought that was a really good scene for both of them. But I do wonder, like, if next time is a choice between them based on trust and loyalty from the power players, like, I think Tyson is going home. So, I mean, I think if Tyson were to know, I don't know what he knew, but if Kieran were to come and be like, okay, I came up with a plan. We're going to put 4 votes on you. You're going to play your idol. 2 votes, we're going to go vote for Teresa. And then I've also offered myself up as a contingency. I think Tyson would be like, wait, what? Like, four votes on me? Why wasn't it four votes on Teresa? And I'll just keep my idol. Like, I'm sure that's what he would have wanted. But it was, again, Kieran outplaying to the point where he could, for Kieran, Tyson should absolutely flush the idol. So I think that was the brilliance of it. And I think that shows kind of the misstep between them, where they weren't completely aligned in what they wanted, because Kieran would want Tyson to flush the idol and he won out in that way. So I think it's a difficult one for Tyson here. And I think Tyson, if we can, let's talk about, before we get back to this tribe, but let's talk about Mike Bloom's decision that he gave them, who was, you know, doing the right thing, who wasn't. Because I think Tyson is the biggest loser in this. Like, to me, he should have played from Unity Island. He did really, really well. He could have won. And he'd still have his idol. Someone like Kieran is on the outs, but he got so much out of his vote. Like, he's trying to be loyal. He's trying to attach himself to the majority. And he absolutely backed that up by going back to camp and flushing an idol and getting out his target and getting close to the majority. Like, wins across the board that he chose to do the choice that would give him the camp and the strategy. But Tyson, I feel, loses out, because in another world, he went to Immunity Island, possibly got another advantage, and still has his idol. So to me, that was like the worst of the decisions not to play for Immunity Island.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so mystified. I see your point, Shannon, and one of the reasons why I want to suggest this fun twist in the first place is because, you know, you are really making a choice in the pre-merge specifically. We like when this happens in the post-merge, right? Of eat or compete, showing how safe do you feel. Now you do it in the pre-merge phase. That makes things super interesting, right? Of like, okay, how safe do you feel, you know, in comparison to the rest of your tribe, and also like group versus individual, who is putting reward on the line. And not, there was an individual component of the group part of the challenge, but really it was like a, you know, how safe do you feel? How much will you stick your neck out to go for immunity here? It certainly, I think, forced Teresa's hand, and that I think it's Marisha or Nicole brings it up later, right? Of, okay, why would she want to go to Immunity Island if she already had an idol? It's clear she was being a little desperate there. But to your point, I think if you have an idol, extend that for as long as you can. I agree that I'm surprised Tyson got to go for it. I'm surprised to a certain extent that Kieran didn't go for it. I am most surprised that Chappies didn't go for it, though. Like, he was the only person left out of the vote. Why? Why on earth are you not saying, okay, let me guarantee that I'm guaranteed to go to tribal council here no matter what. Let me make sure this is a challenge that I'm probably pretty good at. Maybe definitely better than Teresa. I don't know about Inesu, but like, let me guarantee that I keep myself safe here. I know that I'm safe with Santini, but who knows if I'm safe with everybody else. I was just on the back, but let me guarantee that I stay one more round here.
Yeah, just to have two people only doing that challenge is so fascinating to me. I mean, the moment I see only two people there, I'd immediately just join, because the odds are so much higher that I might win that challenge instead of trying for the other one. So I find it quite interesting that only two people actually win for that.
It might have been like they all drew rocks at the same time, or like showed their rock at the same time. I imagine that's how they would have done it, but like the Chappie thing, I'm kinder on that decision. I feel like if you really watch like that scene after Tribal Council, that like pivotal secret scene, they really did a good job. And again, like quite possibly a very truthful job in explaining that it was like all the Paul thing, and like he ate the future life, and like it's not about you. I do think like his vote doesn't matter. Like if they're telling you it's going to be Carla and Warden next, then, you know, if they're lying about that, you're going home. So maybe leave. And if they're not lying about it, they still have a majority to do that. So now you can put them to the test on that.
So you're basically saying what Chappie said last episode, right? Of like a minority vote basically equals no vote here.
Yeah, but also there is, again, the other things we talk about, you know, the negatives of staying on Immunity Island. Like, he just did get left out of the vote. He thinks he's in the majority, but that's a bit dicey. Like, if you go back and just kind of reforge those relationships, like, it was definitely the quietest episode for Chappies that we've had, which I think is, like, not bad for him to just kind of, like, lay low a little bit, get back in with the group and try and kind of get it all back together. But, you know, again, because his vote shouldn't have really mattered, and also based on the fact that he'd just been left out, that little bit of fear, I could see after Tyson, yeah, Chappies for me would be the one to play, but I didn't hate it that much. Like, I could see how he felt comfortable. Obviously, everyone else from that tribe thinks they're the majority, so I get that. So for me, it was mostly just like, Tyson is on the outs and he could still have an idol. Like, that's the only one that I look at now and say, with like the benefit of hindsight and being super results oriented, but just like assuming that that was the state of affairs roughly going into the vote at that time. Like, Tyson's the one who left out, who lost out. He lost his idol. Like, Chappie was right, and he didn't go home. Carla couldn't have possibly known, so it's hard to blame her. So, I don't know. That's where I sit with it. But it was really fun. Like, I think it's really fun to, again, like, let's make, like, selfish versus selfless has been kind of the decision of the season, and let's just, like, hammer that home in the first few minutes.
Yeah, and now there's not, like, a, well, there's a note attached, so now we can sort of, like, show how selfless we are. Like, no, your cards are out there. Though it seems like Inesu, I don't know, we don't really get much opinions, right, about, like, from Tyson and Kieran specifically, of her choosing to go to Immunity Island and them not. It seems like everyone was relatively fine with it. So I guess good on Inesu too, for essentially being able to get away. Arguably in another world, she left her allies high and dry, but also like gets an advantage out of it as well. This was another really good episode for Inesu too. I'm just still trying to wrap my mind around this plan. Because I don't think we've ever experienced this type of situation before. Like, we have certainly experienced split the votes in case someone plays an idol, but I don't think we've ever had a plan where that was the case, but someone included in the plan was someone who was going to play the idol that was going to get the votes, right? That the plan is everyone vote for me so that I can play the idol. We've seen that before, right? That happened to like Joe Mena in Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, even Ben Dreeberg in a bit. We've certainly seen individuals say, great, everyone's going to vote for me and I'll single-handedly decide who goes home. But we've never had that where the idol player was in the majority and actively said, okay, the plan is that everyone's going to split the majority of votes on me. I play the idol and therefore I basically become one of two votes to decide who goes here. It's a very wild plan from that perspective.
Yeah, from everyone's perspective, because Tyson's, yeah, giving up his idol or just like ensuring he'll have to play it. And then the majority are, again, giving up some power to the minority that their votes will have more weight. And again, I just have to credit Kieran because like, yeah, the simple thing is just pile the votes on him. That is the thing. Instead of, you know, it's as Dino is scared and has a right to be scared, like it's scary to vote for someone where your vote's not going to count. We've seen that before where Jacques was like, I'm playing my idol and people did not like that people still voted for him. They felt like, it's really stupid to nullify your own vote. So I think that the fact that they were willing to negate their vote and go with this plan and have that trust, rather than going for a bit of an easier vote in Kieran, again, speaks to just like how well he's ingratiated and the trust that they have and the correct reads on all sides to do that. But like to go back to Inesu at Immunity Island, I asked Teresa, I was like, did you kind of expect her to go back? She does leave them high and dry. Kevin, if you were aligned with Inesu, is this something that would have annoyed you, or you would have been like, okay, look, every man for themselves, and this has been like a tough road for us?
Yeah, I still think that that's going to be something that's going to play a big role coming up. I think that once she gets back and we see the repercussions of her actions, a lot of people are probably going to talk about the fact that she left. So I think there's still a lot in there that we haven't seen yet, and it's going to come to fruition. But ideally, if she was aligned with me, I wouldn't be too upset because it takes it. If one of your allies are at least doing it, people are going to target her. And so it takes some of the threat off you, but you don't know what they're going to get when they get there. That's the problem. So I would much rather go with her or try to at least be part of that challenge. So I think it is quite a give and take.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you think about this trio of Inesu, Tyson, and Kieran, Tyson just played an idol and is going to get more eyes drawn to him because now people know he's capable of finding and playing idols. Inesu is going to have eyes drawn onto her because she obviously stayed and played. And so people are going to wonder, okay, what advantage does she have? Again, who's left in the best position here? Kieran, because nobody is expecting he has anything because his allies are looking like much bigger threats for basically confirming having advantages.
Yeah.
And I think Kieran is completely aware of this fact and he's using it very well, which is why it's even better than it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, for Inesu, just numerically, like her vote, kind of like Carla's last week, wasn't actually that important. Because numerically, so they either have 3-5 if Teresa is with Kieran and Tyson, or they have 4-5 with her. Either way, they'll win on the split, but they'll lose out if someone doesn't split, if they're trying to create like an insurgency plan. I guess 4 votes could also save Tyson's idol on a split vote plan, but you know, small margins. And if they don't have Teresa, they either have 2-6 without her or 3-6 with her. And either way, that does not help. Votes could be split and it's useless. So numerically, they don't need her. I guess it could just kind of be like Carla's was last week in terms of like help and energy and that bridge and all of that. But if I was Inesu, I would just be like, why did you guys not play? Like we all had that opportunity, like, I would have expected you to do the same. We are not in a good situation right now, and I did, like, what was best for me in my game. So I don't think they can blame her. I think that, especially Tyson, should really blame himself in terms of, like, not taking that decision.
Can we talk about the advantage for a second? Because we've seen this before, right? Shannon has mentioned it previously. I've seen a lot of stuff about the name Tribal Council Pass. I agree with them. Yeah, and I like this a lot better than Safety Without Power. I think Safety Without Power is a little bit of a rude name, if we're being completely honest. Like, yeah, you're safe, but you can't really do anything. There's power, I think, in what you're able to do. And especially since there's this added wrinkle that was used in Australia, but not in the United States, that it can be used on someone else too, right? It's essentially saying, like, this is go to jail in Monopoly. And either you're sending yourself to jail or you're sending someone else to jail. That's a lot more power than just like, all right, peace out. I'm not going to vote at this tribal council. So I'm happy it's also introduced here because it means that it has much more longevity to be used throughout the game. And also I like the name better. So good on Survivor SA, doubly so.
I mean, safety is power.
That's true. Take that, US Survivor producers. It's a fun advantage. You know what I would have preferred, though, to be what she could win on Immunity Island?
What's that?
A clue to the Tribal Council idol. Because now I'm feeling like Santini has just gotten an out with this, and I love her so much, and she's done so much that's great. But, like, if she just literally found, like, what was it? That was the one that she won, right? So you can't win one Boston Rob swinging thing challenge to get, like, a dedicated guaranteed idol. Like, it should be hard and it should be like a brave thing to do, or there should be competition. How much fun would it be right now if Inessa could have gone, and if Santini had waited as long as she had? I mean, this probably should have come up earlier. Maybe that should have been what Amy got as well. Like, this really should have come up. Maybe it would have been Carla's thing. I guess we don't know because she never got to that point. But, like, Santini should be suffering here for not putting her hand in the tree, and I think that now we've kind of lost that opportunity. Like, how many more advantages are going to be given out without it being like a clue to this idol?
Yeah, I agree, actually, because I just think it would be really fun to have that sort of like mad rat race treasure hunt, right? Of, okay, now two people know about the idol in the tree. Who's going to go for it first? I guess that can still happen if Santini tells someone like Chappies, for instance, and maybe Chappies takes it instead of her. But Santini wisely has maybe not kept the secret of the idol at camp a secret, but has not told anybody from what we've seen about the idol at Tribal Council. And that's an incredibly smart move because she knows that basically she can keep it there. If nobody else knows about it, nobody's just going to be randomly reaching into the decor at Tribal Council.
I mean, this cost might.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? We have seen people like checking the bottom of the voting urn and everything. Just look behind you, people. It's right there. It's right in the set. But I think that, unfortunately, Santini is really benefiting from the fact that it does seem like that ship has sailed. And I agree. I think it would have been really fun if we had, hell, even more than two, maybe like three or four people. If the advantage for a while was like a clue to an idol hidden at Tribal Council, and just see, you know, essentially like a big game of chicken. Who's going to be going for that idol first, and who's going to be like left high and dry when they reach into a hole and don't find anything?
Because that's what they used to do on like Exile Island, when there used to be so many clues. Like, it's like you keep going and you'd still get clues and you'd be like, oh, well, the idol's been found. And that's why like Ozzy creates a fake idol that eventually becomes like the effing stick. So I think that's like what would be really old school or middle school for me, to just like keep hiding clues. I guess that's not really a fun or fair thing to win at Immunity Island, but there are ways to do this where it's just like she doesn't just have like a tree trunk that is now like her handbag that has her idol in it, and like her and Inessa or people are fighting for this opportunity. I don't know now if it's going to happen, and that is kind of like a bit of a letdown or a missed opportunity for me.
And it's in such a strange position as well, because I know when you're actually on Survivor, there's so many. While you're trying to get onto set, when you're trying to do all these things, there's certain areas where you just, as out of respect for almost the show, you don't want to really go towards those specific regions. So I think like trying to check behind into that tree is not something anyone's going to ever think of doing. It's in such a random position. Mm. Whereas if they had it perhaps with the skull next to the parchment, I think that would have been a little easier to find because everybody tries to look there, but nobody really ever thinks of looking behind the set. Like it's quite a strange position. And that makes me think about how a lot of things that I wish I had done when I was on the show as well, because you're on the show and you're also thinking about the fact that this is a show. So I remember there was that point, I'm not sure if I told you about the story, but Verne and I on the pillar in one of our challenges in Philippines, and it's the one where you have to cross each other on that log. It was quite a difficult challenge. We lost miserably. Mm-hmm. But so Varna whispers to my ear and he says, there's an idol on the side and he needs to get it before Jean does. So I see the idol and then I also look across and see it on the other side as well. So Varna jumps in, gets the idol. And now I'm busy trying to, because out of respect for the show, I love the show so much, but I have so much respect for production as well. So I'm whispering to my mic under my buff, guys, am I allowed to run past Nico, jump across, dive in, and get this other idol on the other side by Tom and them? So there's all these elements of respect that you kind of want to have for the show too. So you're kind of nervous to break the fourth wall sometimes and do strange things like search behind. So I completely understand if no one finds it. So it's kind of quite unfair, I think, as well, that nobody else is getting it.
That being said, RIP to the set for season 9.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to be tearing this place apart thinking that there's idols there.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, ask forgiveness, not permission. Like, that, I mean, that's something that I think, like, Steven has said before, like, Jeremy didn't know if he could, like, yell out to him during the vote because he realized that Spencer had flipped or something during the vote. And he was like, but ask forgiveness, not permission. Like, what are they going to do if you yell that out? Like, it's already out into the universe, right? But I would agree that, like, the way to not have people tearing the set, the way to not have this feel like a little bit out of bounds is just to activate it with clues. And that is on production, to give more people clues to something that may or may not be there. And then it could create a great TV moment. Like, again, love Santini, but if she's relying on this idol that she hasn't got and she gets it with no competition, a little bit meh to me. But like, if she were to stick her hand in a tree and there's no idol there because she should have got it because there is competition, that is an incredible TV moment. So I think that more could be done with that. And anything that's more competitive is I think, better from a production standpoint.
Can we talk about Teresa?
Yeah, how have we not until now is my question.
So much going on. Now, look, Teresa is such a great narrator. To Tevin's point, and we talked about this in the beginning of the season as well, like, her reads are incredibly spot on. I love her as a character. But I'm going to say, I do not think Teresa is a very good Survivor player, unfortunately.
Well, this is the question. This is like one of the big, other than like, should they have taken out a power player? Like, this is the big question that I'll ask you. Was, if Teresa did nothing in this whole episode, does she still go home or does something happen? If she just like kind of lets everyone come to her and doesn't play it, where do you lean on this, Tevin?
I think she probably still does go home. As I said, because it's not just that Teresa's not, she's very aware, but it's also the fact that the way she's talking to people that isn't coming across as well enough for them to want to keep her around. Whereas someone like mm-hmm. Kieran and Tyson seems to be interacting well with others. You see Teresa in the beginning of the show also sitting alone, isolating herself. I mean, this is a social game. You have to at least try and mend bonds if they aren't. I think, Marion was talking about it in your guys' previous podcast. Even if you don't like someone, even if you really dislike someone, you have to somehow go and talk to this person, engage with them, and just check in with them. You just got to be there, which I don't think she was doing. I don't think she was one of those people who actually go to someone she doesn't like and talks to them.
Yeah, I mean, she's the one who loses out here. She's the one who goes home. Like, clearly there was no relationship with these people. She said as much to me that these really weren't her people. And I identify with her in that way. I really do, as like a extroverted introvert or whatever I am. Like, I don't like talking to people that I don't click with. Like, I like talking to my people. I like talking to people that I get along with. I don't like talking to randoms. Like, I've always said, it's such a good thing I met my husband young. I could not date. That would not be me. I don't care. I want to hear your story. You know what I'm saying? So like, I don't think that's necessarily what Teresa was, but there was no love lost with these people. They didn't click. It wasn't her vibe. And like, it's really, really hard to break through that. Whether you want to put that all on her or just the dynamics or any other external factors, like, I think that she was just on the back foot from day dot, and we watched that desperation play out, then like magnified by not having a vote. And I think we saw that like explode in this episode.
I agree with Tevin, though, that like, yes, she was in a tough position. And we've seen this in the case where like some people just don't get on socially with the people that are on their tribe. But man, she did not help things with herself. Going all the way back to what the moment that Tevin mentioned before, right? Where she has this conversation with the three Zomba women and is like, you're going to have to promise me something because you three are a tight trio right now. And I don't think I can trust you. And we even get that a bit in the first scene of this episode, right? With the, like, Inessa saying, oh, I really want to work together. That's great. Hey, can you give me Tyson's note as a sign of trust so that I can actually believe I can trust in you for a second. Like, I think Teresa's issue, as mentioned before, is like, you can think it, you might not want to speak it necessarily, right? Because like the
fact that they searched everyone's bags. I mean, she says it's so like cavalier. It was like nothing. We searched the bags already.
Yeah, we touched your underwear. You know, just like it was a lot. Like,
yeah. And that's the thing is that I think Teresa unfortunately proved herself to be too much of a wild card. And when you're a wild card, you can certainly spin that in your favor sometimes. But she was doing so many things and revealing so much information. Compare this to Kieran or Rainier, both of whom have very good information in their pocket. And Rainier makes this point in his confessional, right? Of like, despite me having all this information, I am going to still play really low key because the moment I leak all that information, like, where is that going to get me? Teresa was in a seemingly pretty good position starting out. Again, she was not exactly in the power position, but she was receiving intel from both sides at this point. I think the more she came clean about all the stuff that she did know, the worse she made herself in this moment. I think she unfortunately showed what you should not do when you have information in this game.
So you think that she did send herself home through doing this? You think that she had a chance, had she not?
I think she definitely had a chance, considering that, again, like, for what it's worth, The scare that she provides Dino and Rainier starting this episode did seem to work for a brief portion of time, right? Like, there is some talk from Dino's perspective specifically of, okay, collateral damage. We got to avoid voting for Teresa. She's basically guaranteed safe. Let's split votes between Tyson and Kieran. There is a world where she could have gotten away with this. And I do wonder if she doesn't end up selling out Tyson here and getting his ire, if there is a world where maybe she's able to squeak by here. She does basically say, like, no matter what, I can't come back from this. It's not to say that she could have saved herself, but she did not make things easier on herself for all the stuff she did in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, with Tyson safe, it's like, who else will they split on? Dino does say maybe, like, Tyson and Kieran earlier on in the episode, and she's the one who's done that, because she's gone and, like, I think really read Dino the best in that, like, his role in this episode was to be, like, super paranoid. I was getting, like, Cochrane vibes of, like, the super fan who doesn't want to go home on the rock draw, or by being, like, the target of an idol, because that would just be such, like, a painfully silly way to have the dream of your life end. So I think, like, that's a good read, and she gets some stuff out of that. I still lean towards, like, it wasn't looking good for her anyway, like, the girls especially leading a charge against her. But I will say, like, her biggest misstep was in losing the relationships that she did with Kieran and Tyson by just being too open. I agree, she was too blunt across the board. A lot of, like, I don't trust you. She's, like, saying that a lot to people, which maybe, like, was too much for Survivor. She seemed to have something pretty good with Vanessa, and I will say that, like, trying to get something out of Vanessa was, like, the first time that, like, that power structure was correct for her, because Vanessa did need her vote. Usually she's kind of, like, trying to get something out of people when she owes more to them. This was correct. But now she has this relationship with the guys that, by her own kind of fault, I guess, she's blown it up. She's confronted Nicole, and now they're upset about it. And here's how it works when you have something like either a real idol or a fake idol or something like this, which is kind of like a big centerpiece that you don't want to use a tribal council. Either it is fake, it's not real, or you just don't want to use it today. You want to extend its life. If you have a fake idol like that you're wearing, for example, the math of wearing an idol like that is, if you wear your idol and they can't split votes, they probably won't vote for you. They'll be too scared because that's too much of a risk. But if they can split votes when you're wearing your idol, they definitely will vote for you to force you to either flush it out or to see if it's real or not. And they have no risk there because they can split the votes. And unfortunately for her, within the course of the episode, largely due to, again, her own action, because she alienated the guys, they did get to a position where they could split votes because the minority had just completely fractured. So at that point, the threat loses all its power. At that point, it becomes like, we definitely do have to vote for you. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of that is unfortunate, and a lot of that can be attributed to her.
Yeah, Tevin, what did you think about this big bluff that she makes, right, with the note that we get from the very beginning of the episode where she says, I have an idol, I'll show you the note, and this will pretty much, like, imply I'm guaranteed safe no matter what. How would you have responded if someone approached you with that idea?
Well, first of all, I would make sure they show me the entire note. I'd want to read it, and thereafter I'd ask her to show it to me. For someone to do something like that, you clearly see that there's this inkling of doubt There's something about it. And you can see Rainier is a bit concerned about it. He knows that something's up. He can tell it's either she can't play it or she just doesn't have it. And to me, it's very suspicious. I would want to see proof. I don't like the move either, though, because she's probably watched Survivor and she has a very good awareness. The only person I think would be convinced by this move was Dino because of how afraid he was of a rock draw or perhaps being one of those people to go home. So I think she knows that nobody else is going to fall for this. And to show someone the corner, I think she shows Marisha the corner of the note. I mean, that's ridiculous. What does that even mean? You can show me any parchment. It doesn't matter. And we're always getting tree mail. A lot of us keep that to try and determine when we can use it as a possible possible Teresa move in the future. But like to show them just the corner and a little bit, I don't think that's a good move.
Yeah, I didn't really get that. Like, why was she, like, she had an actual, I don't know, like, that made it seem to me like you just got some random note on Immunity Island, like, welcome to Immunity Island, and you're trying to use that. Like, you have an actual note, like, definitely let all of them read it. I didn't get that part of the plan. Other than just showing
It didn't say, like, congratulations, Tyson, for digging up this idol. You know, it didn't have his name on it. It
didn't even say, like, this has been found at, like, Zamba Beach, like, a beach she hadn't been to. Like, that could have been her idol. Like, I definitely think it would have been more threatening had people, like, read it word for word.
Exactly. She should have actually showed them the note properly because that's the only way to convince someone. And it's easy to then make an excuse and say, like, I've got it hidden. I don't want anyone to see it or find it. That's okay. But show me the complete note. Don't show me the corner.
Yeah, I'm really confused about that with Marisha. I think Marisha had the correct read here, right? And be like, why is she so squirrely about the note? And even at Tribal Council, Marisha's like, all right, this is your big moment, Teresa. Please show me this brochure, this pamphlet. And Teresa's like, I'm good. I think you've seen all you need to see. It's like, if you have a fake ID when you're trying to get into a bar and like your fingers covering up the date of birth, right? And they're like, okay, can you show that? Like, well, you know, would I be walking into a bar if I wasn't 21? I'm good. You don't need to see it. Like you're not necessarily in that position to make that claim. And when you do, you're only drawing so much more suspicion onto yourself. Like, ironically enough, Teresa, we argued, was maybe a bit too transparent with her information before. But not being transparent about these specific things got her in even more trouble.
Yeah, I mean, the example you gave, except the license is real. Like, this was a real, I don't know, that's what I don't understand about it. And then at that point, surely you're asking, as you said, to, like, see the actual idol. But definitely just to have the idol note would be pretty helpful. And I don't know, she's had it open with Dino and Renee. I don't know how much they were, like, reading it. But I don't know why reading the note was even, like, a point of contention in this.
Yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts, Kevin, on Dino, because it's been an odd sort of like mini arc for Dino as well. We're obviously, like we said, pretty disastrous opening episode. He seemed to have gotten in a pretty good position in the rest of the episodes. But then this episode, he sort of reverts back, and maybe because this is the first time he's gone back to Tribal Council since then, where he hasn't been safe. Because remember, he was safe at his first Tribal Council. But all this talk about collateral damage, and you know, like Shannon said, I think Teresa made the right call here in going to Dino specifically because he was the one that was going to get wound up by this. What have been your thoughts about the way Dino has been playing this season?
I think Dino is really cool to watch. He clearly loves the game. He clearly doesn't want to go home. I mean, I completely get where he's coming from to not want to go home as collateral damage and to be that guy. But the paranoia is too much. I mean, at some point he's going to have to calm down. And just hold himself back a little because someone like Rainier is watching those things. I mean, he knows he's going to start learning how to play around his paranoia. He's going to start learning how to mold this guy because he's so afraid he's going to want to rely on people to keep him safe. And if Rainier is in power, he's going to start using that against him. So I think he needs to be aware of how paranoid he's being because the tribe can see it. Mm. I mean, she saw it. Teresa knew that if by showing Dino specifically this note, he would be the one to scramble. And that's true. That's exactly what happened.
That was the worst part about it for me, was how predictable it was, because you never want to be able to play into other people's hands. And like, she would basically say it, like she would have a confessional about what he was going to do based on the paranoia, and then he would do it. So I think like having something that's so out there and just so obvious to everyone is like a really bad thing, because it makes you like easier to manipulate. I don't know what it says about me that like, whenever I see myself in the super fans, it's when they're doing something wrong. Like when I see Teresa being like, you understand the game, but you can't make it work socially, I'm like, that would be me. Or like Dino's so skittish because like the thing he loves so much, like so scared to lose it, that would be me. But don't, like when Kieran has this like amazing number move, and like I love numbers and split voice. Like, that would not, like, I don't see myself in that at all. So I'm like thinking about this now. I'm like, I see myself in all the mistakes made by all the super fans in these first five episodes.
Yeah, I know. I think it's incredibly relatable, right? Because like we can sit here from the comfort of our own homes making these comments, but I think Tevin can speak to this firsthand. When you're depleted because of the elements, and you, especially if you don't have access to perfect information, it is absolutely understandable that people make the mistakes that they do. And so, like, I find this cast incredibly relatable on that level, in that it's like, yeah, I'd probably be making a bunch of mistakes as well. You know, we can't all walk in there and be like a Rob Bentele and play everything absolutely perfectly. The vast majority of the time, we're going to be so hyper-focused on, like, what is everyone else doing that it drives you up that wall.
I think it's good to have guys like that around, because if I had more, if more people are like that playing, you are far more, you're concentrating a lot more. You're actually someone who's paying attention. You're not getting complacent, because that's exactly what happened to me at some point. The complacency and the overconfidence, because you don't really see everyone actually playing as hard. So you start to not really concern yourself with strategy at that point. But in a tribe like this, you're always going to be alert, because you can see that everybody's trying to out-strategize you at some point. So it keeps you on high alert.
I mean, someone who's on high alert, and I'd love to get your take on this, Kevin, because he's been reminding me of someone that you played with. But Rainier, I feel, is like the person they always go to give like the correct read, the correct take, like obviously leading the pack socially in the group. Teresa said to me in the exit that she was closest to him, like Kieran and Tyson choose to go to him. And I think he does play all of that really well. And I continue to see Werner in him, like not just because I think that they, again, know each other outside of the game, but I just feel like this is that, like, I don't know if it's necessarily a winning game, because it's really difficult to be that dominant and that obvious, especially when you start going to more tribal councils and have everyone kind of just go with it. But I feel like that dominance, like, he's the closest to me of just, like, playing that really, like, hard and strong game that Werner was playing.
Yeah, Werner and him are very much, and they, I think they're both from Secunda as well.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening.
Wow.
Secunda Survivor
something's
fans.
In, something's but, in the water there.
Yeah, clearly. But you can see he's someone who's paying attention. He's got good cognitive skills. He knows exactly what's going on, and he's quite fit. So he's someone who he really reminds me of Werner as well. Every time I see Rainier, I think of Werner. But I also think about the fact that when I was playing with Werner, I always saw Werner as a strategic threat. I always knew that, especially socially, I knew that Werner is the type of guy who everyone is going to go to for advice. He's sort of a father figure to a lot of people because he's so kind. He's really genuine. And you can tell that Rainier is very similar. But a player like that is very scary because they can easily make their way to towards the end of the game. But another thing that comes with it is this target. And I think because everybody knows Rainier is someone who's so good, so nice, so friendly and strategic, he's going to probably be a target and go home at some point. It's not very common that a player like that makes it all the way.
Yeah, it's so tough because I think at this moment, if we're doing like power rankings of all the players overall, I'd be hard-pressed not to put Rainier near or at the top. Because like he even vocalizes in this episode, right? Like, the Zambas have found an ally, have found the majority on Tuba, and those are all people that Rainier's close with, right? Like, he's close with Anella, he has the Underground Mafia with Amy, seems like he had something close with Sean.
Yeah.
He even, like, has that confessional at the swap, right? Where he's like, all my allies are on the other side. And here, it seems like, you know, it seems like everyone is going to him. Even Teresa, right, is saying, like, hey, I was fine with Tyson using the idol as long as it wasn't used on Rainier. That's really telling to me that, like, I'm hard-pressed not to put him at the top of the power rankings right now because he just has so much power and access to so many different people. Now he has this connection with Tyson and Kieran. To Kevin's point, we'll see how long it lasts for, especially when it turns to the post-merge, right? This happened with Werner himself, where he controls so much of the game, gets to the Final Four, and everyone's like, man, Werner's been controlling a lot of the game. Let's take him out, especially with this cast. You know, I would imagine that those thoughts are running through their head. I will say, as powerful as Rainier is, there's something that's not clicking with me personally. I think it's honestly the confessional stuff. We talked about how this is a very strategy heavy season, arguably a little game body, certainly saw in this episode. I unfortunately feel like a lot of Rainier's confessionals are sort of like very explainy, very narrative. And I feel like honestly, the biggest pop of personality we got out of him was the pointing stuff with Jason in the first episode, which was great. but I think
that was Werner's clue eating moment.
Exactly. But I think that's what I'm missing is that I think that it's awesome that he's in such a great position of power, but I think I'm missing a little bit of like that glimpse of personality from Rhaenyra as well that makes him very distinctive as a Survivor player.
Yeah, that is interesting because like with Verna later on, we get about him like wanting to adopt a baby, and like I'll always remember the premiere of Philippines that like Pulessa had that her first confessional. She talks about like being a teen mother, and you're like, all right, like we have that character, and we have that from the pre-season interviews, but like taking the show as its own product, like I think we know like Rhaenyra and I think Chappie's left like pregnant wives back at home, like the Jeremy Collins kind of thing. And we literally compared Rhaenyra possibly as a Jeremy Collins type in the preseason. Like there's a lot of story happening here, and I think maybe it's a little disconnected because it is so strategy heavy. And I think there is a lot here from everyone that maybe even just from like social media or again like the interviews, we get a lot of that and we don't get to see as much of it in the show. And, you know, I guess they're not exploiting personal stories, which part of that is good. But I think for us as an audience, if you had like 90% of that strategy connected to like one core thing that you could really like dig into about this person's personality and like what they're playing for rather than just playing, I think maybe we'd feel more connected. I still do. Like, I feel like I know these people. I spent 15 hours with them in the preseason, but just like the show as its own product.
Yeah, that's what I'm missing personally, ironically enough, is the personal content. Because again, I love talking about strategy. That's why we're on this podcast, after all. But the thing that always brings me back to Survivor is the cast and the storytelling of these people. And while I feel like we have gotten a good amount of strategic storytelling, like we basically have discerned why every vote happened, which is awesome, I think what we're missing specifically is relationship content. You know, is like, okay, Carla and Sean are working together. They trust each other. Why do they trust each other? Why does Kieran feel like Rhaenyra is someone that he can go to? You know, Teresa talked about it in our exit interview, like she and Rhaenyra connect over playing cricket. It feels like those social scenes are not necessarily what we're seeing. And look, it could be just a matter of like this cast is more so brokering trust through strategy rather than social bonds. But I feel like that's maybe the biggest part that's missing with the storytelling this season for me is, okay, We want to get to know why these people are getting along, why these people aren't getting along. That's why last week's episode was so much fun, right? Because we really got to see why people had personal qualms with Paul, with everything that he was doing. It's tough to, I think, sort of like parse out specific people's personalities when you just look at them as, okay, they trust this person and this person. We really don't really have a reason why. It's easier, to Shannon's point, to, I think, remember these characters from the season based on who they are and why they have these specific connections with the other castaways.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's difficult because if you have to look back and look at the relationships, at the moment, no vote will actually make you feel sad or feel quite disappointed about a relationship breaking up.
Carla and Mike Laws maybe is like the one, but yeah. I mean, your vote with PK, that was like that relationship was built up so much, like that was intense, just that betrayal.
Exactly, because for me, he was like a brother on the island. We were both there for each other. We were always talking to each other, and they show the relationship, they show the bromance, and I think that is something that is missing on the season because there's no one who you can really say, if they go home, it's going to really affect the other person.
Yeah, I mean, to take it back to, like, Rhaenyra and Verna, like, that's the comparison. Like, even without knowing what's going to happen later, we don't know what's going to happen with the story and where it will develop. But I think, like, the thing with Verna, which was always a thing, was that, like, he was a pastor and it was about him and his, like, religious values versus his super fandom. Like, that was always really interesting to me. I'm trying to remember, like, how much it was baked into the story. But it felt like that was already something to kind of hang on to. It's like, here's this super fan pastor who is eating a clue, and that is a lot of things at once, so we can like take from his personality from that. And Rhaenyra, pointing aside, like we haven't been given a lot, like we heard it in the interviews, and I feel like I do know Rhaenyra, but like on the show itself, like he is just the leader, and I know that he has like a very strong Christian faith. I'm interested to see how that intersects, you know, the same way that I was with Verna, and that's not something that's really spoken about. So I'd love to hear about his family. In the interview, we heard about him being a young dad. In social media, I've since seen that he just had a baby. I worked back 9 months, left a pregnant wife. So that kind of, you know what I'm saying? So like that kind of thing, I know it's there. And I like, for me, I can't separate that from the show. That's the person that I'm watching. But then if I'm trying to like just extrapolate out and just think about the show as a product, I think we could get bits of that. And it wouldn't just be like, here is this guy that everyone loves who's running the tribe. And then if he does win, that we'll put a lot of meaning into that. And if he has a downfall, it will break our hearts. So I want to see where that goes for sure. I'm like not writing it off, but that's like, I think a good comparison to make.
Yeah, and I think that's also Survivor SA. We talked about this before, especially this season. They're really doing like episodic storytelling, I would say. It's not like they're dropping long-term storylines. There certainly are some seeds being planted, but it's more so going to say, this is what happened in this particular episode. We're going to talk you through everything that happened. And unfortunately, as a result, people who have not played like a major role have not showed up as much, right? Like poor Keon, poor Nicole, to a certain extent. They have not really had parts of the story because like it really hasn't been their story up to this point. We've really gotten to know each and every person who's left the game. The unfortunate downside of that is that there are people left who we don't know too much about because we have given so much focus to those eliminated people. Now, that being said, again, Survivor SA, I do feel, tends to balance things out at the end of the day. Again, I keep bringing this up, but Darrow was invisible for the first like 4 to 5 episodes of the season. And then he ends up becoming like one of the biggest characters of the season overall. So it's not to say like, all right, Purple Keon from here on out. I think there will definitely come, and I trust there will come a time where these characters are going to get more of a pop on screen. It's just, I think, an unfortunate trade-off that because we're getting to know so much about, you know, these 5 or 6 people, to the point where people are saying like, man, it sucks to see Carla go, sucks to see Teresa go, like such big characters in their own right. It comes at the cost of, I think, getting to know more about the current people in the game because we're concentrating so much on these specific people that are leaving right now.
Mike, I don't know how to tell you that Darrow upside as a best case scenario is not that good a situation in terms of the edit.
I mean, listen, Darrow kept us entertained all season long. He kept us well fed, much like he did himself. So who knows? I mean, it's also unfortunate that Keon's like the one thing now we know about Keon in this season is that she goes and spills the plan, to Tyson about Teresa gunning for him.
Yeah, like she's a huge editing question mark for me because like the last time we really saw much of her, she was completely on the out. She's getting votes at that first tribal council. And I think that's why we made assumptions of like, all right, well, these old Luna members have come in, but there is Teresa. Okay, that was correct. There is Dino, but we have seen parts of Dino ingratiating more, being sent on expeditions, bonding with people like Marisha. All right. But Keon, we don't see anything. And the next thing we hear, she's like in with the girls. Even the other tribe is saying that. And she is in this group. There wasn't even, it seemed, a question in this episode about whether she'd be a potential swing vote or her and Dino, as we thought they could possibly be coming from that. And there was like no explanation given when they had been on the outs. So I was a bit confused about how that happened, but I guess it was just like an absolute non-starter.
Yeah. Tevin, do you have any thoughts about, some of these more quiet players in the game? Do you think they're going to have their due?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, I think Keon is someone who, if I was Tyson, Kieran, I would definitely keep on bringing up the fact that she's the one who spilled the beans. You know, that's something you want to always do to fracture that sort of group and alliance, because not only is she not talking much, but the one thing she does say is such a bad thing. I mean, she clearly spilled the beans on the plan. So I think, obviously, that's going to be something that might come up in the future. I mean, if you take my season, Vusi was almost invisible in the first few, many episodes. And then at some point, he finally came on. But I remember in South Africa losing.
I don't have a great sense of Vusi even now. I'm not going to lie to you.
But I remember South African fans like losing their minds about this. They were very pissed off that Vusi had no screen time. So I think that obviously now the show is trying to balance out screen time for everyone else. And I think that goes to this. It's tough to find that perfect balance of giving everybody a good story and then also trying to maintain those relationship stories as well. So I think they're in a bit of a predicament when it comes to that because people are never satisfied.
Yeah, I will say I do think every dog has their day on South African Survivor. Even if it's like, okay, Keon goes next episode, I think we're going to see a lot of her. I don't think this is going to be like, what was it, Hannah in Australian Survivor, Shannon, who like went home without ever having a confessional.
I think Hannah got one. Was it? Oh my God, I don't even remember the name of the poor woman who got.
I think it was Hannah who went home with 0 confessionals.
I should know that.
Poor woman. LaRue has so much care for this cast and this show that he wouldn't necessarily do that. It's just at the moment, I think, to Tevin's point, where we're like, where are these people? And I think it's just a downside of the way they're editing now, where we have really gotten to know the 6 people that have gone so far that I think you could count probably 6 people that we don't know a lot about that are currently still in the game because of that.
Yeah, I mean, Kion being, like, I think the major one. And all we know about her is that she, like, looks through the rice and then spills the beans. What food substance will she next interact with? But on that note, in terms of who we've lost, I do think, as I've said, difficult week for the double boot this week. Absolute huge loss. I would love to give a bit of a eulogy to the two people that we lost this week. And two of the big characters, like someone like Carla, like you got to look at two different charts. Chili charts was second on the chili charts, which means something. Confessional, she was number one. So in terms of like both strategy and character, I think she was huge strategic factor, like a huge pre-merge character. And I talked about this with her in her exit, like the fact that her game swung every single vote. She went to Tropical Council four times in a row and it swung dramatically each time where she was like the biggest winner and the biggest loser. I said to her, like, you probably played 39 days in the time that you had. And she was, even within that, like, she had the give up and go decision. She had the facial reaction. She had all of it. I think we're really going to feel that loss. Like, I think there'll be a little bit of a vacuum around her as a character and also, like, her role in the strategy of the season.
I'm going to miss Carla so much. Just such, like, a great character. And again, this is someone who I think, I don't know, defied my expectations. I think when we were listening to her in the preseason, like she has a big story coming in that also wasn't really talked about on the show, right? Like her battle with addiction. But I love what she was able to do. But like, while she was hyper strategic and cutthroat, she still had this emotional side, right? She says in her day after video that her biggest regret was being like too protective of Mike Laws and Warda. And so she had this like surprising emotionality to her as well. But there's a reason why she was the confessional leader in the clubhouse, is because, like, damn, she can deliver a hell of a soundbite. She made the game so exciting. Let's remember that she was the one, from what we saw, to lead that blindside against Pinty. So, I mean, great, great job on Carla. She had made her five episodes on Survivor South Africa so great, like, could stretch well beyond her time. I do think she is remembered as one of the most memorable pre-mergers in Survivor South Africa history, present company notwithstanding.
Yeah, I think I completely feel her pain. I know what it's like, and I'm pretty sure it's brutal. I mean, you want to make it post-merge so bad. You want to get to that opportunity to play for an individual immunity idol. You want to have that chance. So I think to go home so soon, especially when you are a big character, because I know I also had a lot of screen time, did so many confessionals, and you, when you're watching it back, you feel so sad. I mean, you re-experience it, and it's so sad to watch yourself go home knowing that you could have possibly done more. And I think she was even saying that she's going to leave it to fate at that point, and maybe it's a bad thing. I can't remember exact words, but I think it's true. In that moment towards the end, when you're kind of seeing everything crumbling down, a part of you gives up. And I think that's a bad thing. You have to sort of fight till the end. And that's something I'll definitely do if I ever play a game.
Yeah, I mean, Teresa, like, she was so different in that way, but it has, like, the same heartbreak. For her, like, her game never gets off the ground. But I think, like, definitely, like, a fan favorite character, and if even from the preseason, well, at least for me, you know, personally as well, as I said, I could kind of see myself and my super fandom in her. And my heart kind of breaks for that, because it's like she didn't even get to cast a vote, and that really hurts me. And just, yeah, she got nobled, as Mike was saying to me in the DMs. Like, she didn't even get to cast a vote for reasons, even in going to two different tribal councils. And, like, even the way she says, like, that she went down swinging, like, it just cuts my heart, because I just know, again, like, the passion for the game and the love of the game, and it can kind of try and sympathize with the idea of it just not going the way that you had planned, and like kind of from the beginning, like not even really, like Carla's was like a big downfall, but at least you were at the heights, whereas like Teresa, it felt, was like kind of suffocated under it from the beginning, which is painful for me to watch. So I would have loved to see, you know, some more layers to her story, that it could have played out further, she could have gotten like more of a win within it, even if she was going to go home kind of early on. I mean, yeah, it hurts me as well to see her go. I think we were robbed this week.
Yeah, Teresa, her confessionals were so great. And not even in the Carla way of like really showing that sass, but more so, I think, to a point that Tevin made of just like, she had such good reads on everything that was going on. They couldn't read her note, but she could read the game in terms of figuring out like, this is exactly what's going on. And so from that perspective, like, I would love to see her as like a Survivor commentator, because I think she really has.
Mike, we don't need any more of them getting into the game. Like, that's what we do. Don't introduce competition. No, right? Don't do that.
So, but the fact that, like I said before, it's incredibly hard to play with all this imperfect information. Somehow she was able to like really accurately figure out everything that was going on. it's just, you know, that telltale lesson, right? Of you can know everything about the game, but sometimes you're not able to necessarily put everything in practice based on either who you are as a person or the position that you put yourself in. But these are two very big characters who kept us incredibly entertained for these five episodes. I'm really sad to see them go, but as I mentioned before, I'm very excited for hopefully some of the other cast members to hopefully fill that vacuum and I think get more screen time and continue to absolutely light this game on fire from here on out.
Yeah, it is quite disappointing to see her go. But I think she's the only one from the Eastern Cape in South Africa. So you guys know these people a lot better than I do because you obviously did the pre-interviews. But I mean, she obviously felt left out. She felt like she wasn't part of the gang. And I think it's even more disappointing to know that she didn't manage to make any social connections with people on that island. So her journey probably wasn't even that fun. Being on the outside, which breaks my heart even more because anytime you see someone sitting alone on the beach like that, except for when I think about Martina sitting on that chair on the beach, but anytime you see someone sitting alone like that on the beach, I would want to go and talk to them and at least try and bring them in and just at least try and make their life on the island a little better. So yeah, it is quite sad to see her go.
Yeah, I feel like when I see someone sitting alone on a beach on Survivor, it is my indication that I should befriend them one day. Like, I think, like, feel like Nick had that. I feel like Dylan from Survivor New Zealand had that. Like, that, a jog had that. Like, I'm like, okay, we're going to be friends. Because, like, I get it. I sat alone on Top Model. It wasn't the beach, but I felt very alone. And I can understand feeling alone. And I feel like I reach out to those people. And I did ask Teresa, like, about her experience. And she seemed to, you know, have fun with it and think that it was positive, which is great. But I think as super fans, like, we can see two very opposite trajectories happening and be upset that both have ended here at the same time. And one of them is like, wow, you got everything out of the experience. How terrible is it that it ended so soon? Because you could have done that much more if you'd done that much in five episodes. And the other is, I wish you could have got a little bit more out of it and for it to end here. So it's like the opposite thing. And like both are sad. I think I just don't like when this cast gets voted out of Survivor. Part of me, like when I was doing the exits last night, I was like, remember the preseason when everyone was in the game? I loved that. Remember when Mike Wells was around? I miss that. I miss these people. Like, I don't want them to go home. I don't think I agree to this.
The name of the game, Shannon. No. It's called Survivor.
Bring
not,
in
not
Edge
camp.
Of Extinction. No. I want them to hang out.
Please,
I miss
don't
these
say
people.
That.
I don't want to see them go home. I don't want them to be pre-merge. It's sad to me. Anyway.
I don't like the Edge. I don't like it.
No, I don't. Believe me. No one hates it more. I'm sorry for even saying it. I'm joking. Yeah. I hate the Edge of Extinction. I think I love these people more than I hate the Edge. I just want them to be around. And then Therese will be on the Edge and Carla's facial expressions. We'd have fun. I'm completely joking for anyone who doesn't get it. Please never, ever quote me on this. Never take this clip. Never take it out of context.
I don't think I'll ever get the image of Carla eating the sugar cane the way she was. I mean, she was enjoying that sugar cane.
Yeah. I also love the fact that, you know, now that Paul's gone, like the mice will play, right? Everyone's like, okay, now we can eat the sugar cane. Finally, the hoarder's gone.
Yeah. The fact that he stole those two Future Life bars. I can't believe that was not a plot line on the show that Sean had said that. Again, incredible marketing, completely free of charge for Future Life. And also just like a hilarious storyline. We were robbed of that too.
On that point, Future Life, just as while we're on that topic, I hear you guys having a lot of debates and discussions. I actually like Future Life. It tastes really nice, and there's a lot of different flavors. So yeah, it's not bad. I think when you compare Future Life to Biostrat, Future Life by far much better.
Not a really good comparison. We've tried Biostrat. We know.
On the island when I took my sip. The thing is, you're so hungry and tired and thirsty that anything other than water tastes amazing. Because I remember taking a sip of the Biostrat thinking, I would take anything right now. So on the island, Biostrat's not bad. But in reality, Future Life.
Okay, a couple of things. Firstly, I love that now the Biostrat isn't a sponsor. All of the stories are coming out of the woodwork about people's experience with it on the island. They're never coming back. Secondly, I also love that Tevin's like, oh my God, the last time I spoke to you, you weren't even married. I just had the thought, oh my God, the last time we spoke to Tevin, we hadn't even tried Biostrat yet.
Completely comparable life events, yeah. I would say.
2019, huge year for me. I tried Biostrat, and that's what I remember about that year. Tevin, believe me, we're going to get into it in the Biostrat Variety Hour. I think the last time we spoke to Tevin, I don't think the Biostrat Variety Hour even existed. It was around that time that it was created.
Yeah, because I think that was when in the beginning of season 7 was when I just accidentally coined the phrase. But I think it didn't become an official segment until I would say like midway through season 7.
Okay, well, yeah, we're going to get into it, but before we do, I think we should, you know, we've already spoiled a lot of the chizzy. But I mean, while the 3 points might be a bit more obvious, I think this has been the toughest week yet for me personally on the chizzy. And so, thus, take it away, Jacob Sega Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
Because this was a hard week, Mike, you can start.
No!
You asked to start. This is why I do this. You asked for it.
Oh, God. Not this week. Mike, not all this.
Feeds off the energy of the other opinion, so you had to have let him go last.
Exactly. I'm a succubus in that regard. All right. Oh, let me throw some names out here then. And let's see. All right. So 3 points. Yeah, I'm going to go. It's a non-starter. It's going to Kieran. Again, to really emphasize what happened before, like, I think he had his cake and ate it too. I think despite the fact that he is still down arguably 5-3, I think he played things really well. I think he set himself up really well long term. And unlike his other two allies who might be targeted more because of the advantages they may or may not have, I think that Kieran is somebody who, you know, is able to benefit from sort of like slipping under the radar from that perspective. He might become like, if Rainier is the Rob Bentele, like he might become the Mike in that regard of like making this really tight one-on-one bond with him that maybe when it comes to whittling down other people, Rainier might think of Kieran over some of his own allies. So I think Kieran has a good path right now that he set up for himself. And he really had like a big first episode, honestly, of the season. 2 points are going to go to
the agonizing you're doing. I did this off air over the last 2 days.
Yeah. I'm really debating. You know what? I'm going to give 2 points to Tyson here. Okay. I might slot him in the one, but I'm going to sort of have this to make up for like previous episodes where it's odd. We have not given Tyson any chizzy points up to this point. And I think it's just due to the fact that he only has been to Tribal Council once. And even in that episode, we made the argument, Shannon, that like, I don't know if that was a good move for Tyson specifically, considering that, you know, Pinty wanted to work with him and also that he kept around someone like Mike who did not trust him whatsoever. Mike luckily got swapped away and voted out. And so I think, despite the fact that he doesn't have an idol and that he is certainly more visible than Kieran was, I think him making that relationship with Rainier, despite the fact that it was Kieran's idea, is really good for his game. I think he hopefully has taken the target and threat level off his back by getting rid of that idol, while also maybe being able to find another idol as well, since he's certainly capable of it. He was, you know, really the most visible of these three former Vuna members. And the fact that he was able to survive relatively unscathed should get 2 points here. And I am going to give, let's just keep on the train here, 1 point to Santini. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, I do think that the Zambas, this was more so like a confirming move for them. But look, Carla was coming after Santini. Santini is continuing to check things off her list and got rid of someone that was going to eventually gun for her. That's all the hallmarks of a good move in my book. So I'm going to continue the trend of Santini getting points here and give her one.
Okay, Tevin, where are you going with your points?
Oh, no, this is such a difficult one. Well, I think the three is also very obvious. Kieran,
yep,
deserves it. I think his game this week was amazing. I think everything he's done in this episode was worth the 3 points. The rest is quite a difficult one. I mean, this is... I'd also give two to Tyson. I think Tyson also, the fact that he had the idol and could play it in a time where he definitely needed it is worth 2 points. But for me, it's the last one, the last point that I'm having a lot of trouble with. And I think I'm going to give it to Chappies.
Okay.
Only reason is I feel like Chappies is the type of person who, by the way, do you guys know what Chappies is in South Africa?
Yeah, the gum thing.
It's a gum, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. I feel like the word
Chappies. We've been through it.
I feel like the word Chappies in itself already gives a little bit of a dopamine spike in everyone's brain. So I feel like Chappies is the type of character who can sneakily get to the end Even though he's perceived as a threat, he's one of those people who kind of knows when to hold back. And I think if you ask someone who, I'm not sure, was his job motivational speaker or some coach?
Yeah, he's like a transformation coach, I think is his official title.
Yeah, so I think if he does something like that, it's a great way to kind of interact with people because this is fundamentally a social game. So the fact that he was on the chopping block and Wada, for example, assumed it was Chappies from the get-go, the fact that he survived, I think he gets a point for that.
Okay, you really hit on something amazing. Like, imagine changing your name just to something that people like and don't want to vote out. Like, hi, I'm Kittens. Are you going to vote out Kittens? Are you a monster who would do that? Yeah.
Like, oh, like, my name's Mike, but you can call me Chocolate.
Yeah, what, do you want to vote out Chocolate? Who hates chocolate? Only terrible people. That's a strategy.
All the subtle things people need to think about when they play Survivor. These small things. I mean, saying Chappies automatically makes people probably feel a little bit nostalgic because the gum's not as famous anymore. But I know all the people playing the game right now have chewed a lot of Chappies in their lives.
I've chewed Chappies. I have. In my childhood, I did. I chewed Chappies in my childhood.
Oh, so that's interesting. Okay, so there's a nostalgic perspective. So, like, if I name myself, like, Dunkaroos, for our American listeners out there, people will be like, oh, I love Dunkaroos. They were so great when I was a kid. Oh, I got to work with Dunkaroos here.
This could go far. Okay, firstly, if someone goes in and they use the nickname Dunkaroos, 3 chizzy points first week. I can guarantee you that. I'm going to pull a mic and just give out my chizzy points. Just for the TV. Definitely into it. Can we make it branded? Can we go community with this? Like Subway, go in, hi, I'm Biostrath. That's, you know, and maybe that's not as good. Maybe you want to be Fresh Stop or something people like. Are you going to vote out Fresh Stop? People seem to love Fresh Stop. Let's do that.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Now the question is, if Fresh Stop's still a sponsor, is that a conflict of interest?
I think they'd love you if you called yourself Fresh Stop and you were on the show. That would be a lot of great advertising for them. Unless you were terrible. That's where it gets weird.
I'm surprised there's no Mostias because Steers is very tasty.
Yeah, no, everyone is very much a hard agree on Steers being great. Also, I feel like we've jumped into the Biostrath variety hour. I still have my cheesy points to give. So I just can't get around like Dunkaroos. How is that where you, like, terrible name in general. Something I'm learning. I love the name Asha Bloom. I'm going to have to credit that to Angela because you try to name Pungus.
She completely came up with it.
Okay.
Because yeah.
You're bad at naming things. So it must have been Angela.
Yeah, what other examples do you have?
You called me Pungus. How much you love that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. No, it's a running theme. All right. My chizzy points. 3 points going to give to Kieran. It's all been said. He was brilliant. Now it gets tricky. And here's where I feel like I have a 3-2-1 for both tribals. Like, it's so unfair to the people who played well because it's just so much harder when there's, like, 2 votes. But I'm glad that you guys gave some votes to some of my honorable mentions because I'm glad they could get some votes even if they're not from me. I'm going to give 2 votes to Amy because, as I said, I do want to reward the Zumba 3 broadly for the way they've swung this, for the position that they find themselves in. And I could have maybe thought about Sean, but... Again, the tribal stuff I just felt like was too much. So I take away some points there. But I feel like, yeah, to be in the center now, she doesn't have any of the unforced errors that we could have maybe pointed to in the last couple of weeks. We saw her in the center. We saw a lot of trust there, and I think she played it really well. So I'm going to give her 2 points and kind of representing the Zumba 3 there. 1 point I'm going to give to Rainier. So I've gone in a little bit of a different direction to you guys, but I feel like he represents the best of the Nuna majority. His reads are good. His connections are good. People are coming to him. And the plan went through like as he thought it would, and it needed to be correctly read and trusted on both sides for Tyson and Kieran to do that, largely Kieran kind of leading it in that direction, and then for Rainier to lead it in the other direction. And again, you can say, did the majority do the wrong thing by allowing Tyson and Kieran to have that agency where someone could have been voted out? The point is that they didn't choose to do that. They did go with the plan, and that correct read and trust has to be attributed to both sides. So I'm giving that to Rainier there. I do think Kieran was like, far and away the best on that tribe, so I'm kind of using Amy to, like, demarcate that kind of gap. Yeah. Honorable mentions, Santini to me was most unlucky to miss out on my points. I'm glad that she got some points within the week. I think she did great work, but I gave her a lot of the benefit of the doubt last week. I gave her 3 points last week in the hope that, you know, she executed it perfectly, and I hope that she'd cover it well, and she did, kind of carrying on with the same brilliance. So I feel like it's kind of covered in last week, but... If this was a week with one tribal council, I would have given 3 to Amy, 2 to her, and 1 to Sean. So I feel like she really does miss out there. And then an honorable mention to Tyson. It's kind of like what we said, you know, with the pointy vote. There was a lot of good. it was enough that we should mention it for me. But then there was some stuff where I feel like he kind of lost out. I do feel like he did get outplayed by Kieran. He did have to use his idol. And he's the one I think really should have most played for Immunity Island. So to me, that was like the biggest cross against it. There's good and bad there, but definitely worth an honorable mention where if it had been, again, one tribal council, it would have been 3 to Kieran, 2 to Rainier for me, and 1 to Tyson. So honorable mentions there, but that's my 3-2-1. And now I need to do some quick math. You guys filibuster for 30 seconds while I do this.
Yeah. No, the Rainier point is interesting. I think for me, the reason why he's an honorable mention for me, the reason why I didn't give him points is because I think I talked about this last week with why I gave Carla the 3 is I think I realized I tend to favor those who like started the episode in a not good position and then ended the episode in at least a pretty good position. That happened with Carla last week. That definitely happened with Kieran and Tyson this week. So I wanted to give Tyson more credit, even though I think that Rainier, like you said, if this was a Vuna only episode, I think Rainier certainly would get credit because he continues his dominance. He gets information about Tyson's idol. Seems like he's making connections with Tyson and Kieran. This was absolutely Rainier's biggest episode since the first one where he does end up winning the Chizzy for that week. So I think this was a very good week for Rainier as well. And I'm intrigued to find out, hopefully we have some Chizzy scholars out there as to like whether this is the first season where like, it feels like there's an incredibly diverse amount of contestants that are getting Chizzy points this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving it across the board. So with that in mind, here is the charts. So Santini still leading it. She's now on 21 points with the one she picked up this week. Carla is still second for the week that she's gone out. She'll preserve that for another week on 14. Kieran did jump up to third in this one week with, I'm pretty sure, the first clean sweep of the season. 3 threes across the board. He is now on 12, 9 that he got this week. Clear Chizzy winner this week. Then we got a bunch of nines now. The Chappies went up to 9 from 8. Rainier went up to 9 from 8. And Anessa was still on 9. So that's really close. Interested in what's going on with that. Amy jumped up to 5. Then we have Smash on 3. We have Dino on 2. We have Marisha on 1. Sean on 1. Tyson is on 4. I know that's not in the order, but I'm writing things down on my notes. So whatever I just said, Amy and then Tyson and then Smash and then everyone that I said. So yeah, a lot of people getting points. And yes, Santini continues to be in the lead, but it is not necessarily a runaway. And I'm just, you know, enthralled by the race.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. Remember, Carla was in second and look what happened.
Yeah.
I think if I had to give some honorable mentions, I would also just go for someone like Anela. I think he's playing the game. Well, if we're not looking at this episode alone, I think he's one of those people who's playing the game very well. He's very strategic and very social. He's someone who can easily make it under the radar as much as possible. And I think Rainier obviously deserves an honorable mention. He's playing a great game, completely aware of what's going on in the tribe. He knows exactly who's doing what. Everybody keeps coming to him. When you are that person, people tend to come to you whenever they need you. And because you're so vulnerable on that island and you need so many things, like for example, if Varna's getting food for the tribe, it's one of those things that make you really want to go to that person and just be there because they're feeding you. I think Santini mentions it quite well when she says, we'll get a little bit of Varda next time because we can at least get supper tonight. And I think that's a really important factor when you're on that island and hungry.
Yeah, Wilder's cooking is like a major plot point of the season in both directions.
It's a good point. It reminds me of back in Champion, Shannon. Remember when they decided, like, was it Xavion, right? He's like, I want to vote out Sivu, not Bootle, because, I want to get rid of Val, not Bootle, because Bootle makes the fire, and we don't want to be without our fire maker. Like, sometimes those camp decisions actually do incorporate in keeping people around.
No, but Wilder's is so funny because Paul was insisted that her cooking was terrible. Now her cooking is keeping her in. Her cooking is like a player on this season. But the player that it is like Carla, just like up and down. Like, is her cooking good or not? That'll be the mystery of the season. Was Wilder's cooking actually good? We need a consensus on that because I'm hearing like wildly differing opinions.
It's quite difficult to actually make stuff. I remember there was one day on the island where we accidentally put too much sea salt into our rice. And the rice was so salty that none of us could have it anymore. It wasn't edible. So we basically wasted a pot of rice. But some of us just put it down and just tried to eat it. But from a medical perspective, that's really not safe.
Hey, there's a secret scene this week where they're eating fire ants. So like, I think anything kind of goes. Salty rice.
Yeah, flying ants, not fire ants.
Oh, I don't know. Ooh, flying ants sounds terrifying. I hate that.
Well, unless, though, is this another bloat, gloat, or vote thing, which we should mention here, because we're going to, I know, start moving into social media stuff. Shannon, you were right.
Yes, thank you for saying that. Pungus wins again.
Pungus lives again. Yeah. She defeats Dunkaroos.
I knew it would be... One thing I know is good marketing. I knew that Vote or Gloat made no sense, Mike. So Carla did confirm for us that it was Vote or Bloat last week. But then for some reason, the episode was called Vote or Gloat. I don't know why. But, look, Vote or Bloat makes sense. I love the challenge that you came up with this week, Mike, was basically no Vote or Bloat. That's what they were doing.
Exactly. No, I love the fact that I don't know if it was the show felt like that wasn't a good episode title. They had to, clean it up a little bit, or they just misheard Carla. But I like the fact that we now have two different realities where it's Bloat or Vote or Gloat or Vote are somehow sort of like the Berenstain Bears, two different universes.
Look, it's lucky that there might not be any more tribe names on US Survivor, because otherwise I think eventually we'd see Vote versus Bloat versus Gloat. We'd have to get there eventually, the three tribe seasons. Mm. Tell me that sounds weirder than Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. Tell me
just a smidge, but not too much.
Yeah, not too much. Well, I mean, I do want to get into the Bias Wrath Variety Hour. I love with the Chili that we basically just named half the cast, maybe even more at this point. Just a time, the cast is so great, and to kind of just be positive about it and the gameplay and have a section just for that. I just continue to love it. My Chili merch. Anyway, Bias Wrath Variety Hour. Take it away, Jacob Sega Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blue.
And now, it's the Bios Draft Variety Hour, with your hosts, Shannon Goss.
I don't know what I was expecting.
And Mike Bloom. Bios Draft, it's delicious.
Oh my god.
Why was it so thick?
One.
Yeah, that all happened since the last time we spoke to Kevin, so much has changed.
You guys have a horrendous time.
Look, I had fun. Honestly, it was just my favorite podcasting moment of all time. I take back nothing.
No, I'm talking about the Bias Draft, the way you guys were coughing up.
Yeah, no, that I loved it. That was my favorite podcasting moment that I've ever had, though. I take nothing back. I regret nothing. I can't taste it right now. All I can taste is the moment of what that was and the memory.
That's a good point. Yeah, all the taste that's left in our mouths is not of the disgusting yeast-filled Biostrat, but more so about the memories we made.
Exactly. Yes, that's what they should make the slogan of Biostrat. Biostrat, it's about the memories, not about the taste. Explicitly not about the taste. But Tevin, since you last came on, we do have the Biostrat Variety Hour. It's a whole thing that we're doing. We're doing the Branchula now. We're trying to replace Biostrat in my heart. So you're saying Future Life isn't that bad. I have to ask, so Marion did say she would mail it to us. Would it be funny for us to try it on the podcast, or it's just not that bad and that would be an iffy, meh segment?
No, I think it's just not that bad. It would probably be an iffy, meh segment. So it's kind of the powder, as everyone's describing it. You can either have it as cereal or as a shake, but some people like to add just enough milk into it so that it has a bit of a thicker consistency. And then some people like to down it as a shake where it's obviously more watery. You can either add milk or water, but there's so many different flavors now, so it's difficult. So it all depends on what she's sending you. Is she sending you the chocolate flavor? Is she sending you the original? That all comes into play, but it's really not that bad. So I think comparing it to Biostrat is a bit of a...
Okay. That's disappointing. It's not great. I mean, I forgot to send her my address. Mike, did you send her your address?
I have not yet.
Yeah,
no.
So I don't know. Is it worth it now? I mean, look, maybe we should just try it for ourselves, but you can't recreate the Biostrat moment. Again, it was the best moment of my 2019.
Just have your husband secretly tape you eating Fresh Stop and then see if the footage is worth it.
Yeah. I don't know if I would love my husband secretly taping me and then releasing that. But anyway, I don't know where this is going. But Tevin, I want to get your advice, and that is, who should I stan? You know these brands better. Who can replace Biostrat for me, in your opinion?
Look, I'm trying to think about which brand is going to stay for as long as possible. Outsurance is back, so they seem like they realized that this bandwagon was worth jumping back on. That's a tough one, guys. Future Life seems like a good option, because if I was on the island and I got a Future Life pack, I would know there's at least quite a lot of nutritional value in the Future Life compared to the Biostrat. So from that regard, I would consider Future Life. But just name me some of the other sponsors, as a reminder.
I'm not just going to name them for you, but I put a lot on it. I mean, Future Life, it really comes all down to the social media. Because even before we tasted Biostrat, the thing was that they were like, they would kind of roast the contestants on social media, and I love that. No one's really doing that in this season. So anyone can kind of come and take the title through the Branchula as we make our way through this preseason of the Branchula that we are currently on. So to go through the social media, and then maybe when you see who's doing well with it, you can see who's better to stand. But okay, so we had the lower thirds that were not as funny as last week. I did think great catch by Josh Small, who sends us in every week. Cape Union Mart had prepare for survival, as Teresa was saying, her name will keep coming up. So that's well done. Like, that's well placed.
The other day, I just went to Cape Union Mart to buy a K-Way jacket. And there's so many Survivor items all over the place. And there's a lot of advertising. And the ladies at the counter was like, oh my God, you're from Survivor. I should give you this for free. But she didn't, which was quite disappointing.
What? Wait, what? She offered it to you and didn't do that?
I know. It is so disappointing. I kind of got excited because it was quite an expensive jacket, relatively not in dollars if you're comparing it to Rands. But it was quite disappointing because I got quite excited. I was like, yes, I'm getting this jacket for free. But then she said, unfortunately, I don't have that power.
Oh, well, that's you know an what indictment.
She said, oh, I have this receipt. That means you get a free jacket. You're like, oh, can I see it? Like, no, like, that's enough. There's this receipt exists, but yeah, you just trust me.
Wait, so she literally was like, I'd love to give it to you for free, but I won't. That's not cool. That's not exactly. Cool.
Say these things, salespeople.
Yeah.
She was very excited, though. I mean, but other than that, I had to pay.
Wait, so did she recognize you, or did you say, oh my God, there's so much Survivor stuff. I was on Survivor.
No, she recognized me.
Oh, wow.
So
I was buying a K-Way jacket, which a lot of them are wearing K-Way jackets on the season, I see, because I think it was quite cold during that period when they were filming the show. But there's some really nice jackets there, so I just went to pick up one. It's quite cold in right
now. You're not the first person we've had on this podcast who strongly feels like they're angling for a sponsorship with one of these people, but I'm obsessed with that entire interaction. It's like, oh my God, Tevin, you were on Survivor. I'm such a fan. I'd love to give this to you for free. I can't. Don't know why I mentioned that, but I'm really excited to meet you. Like, that's a bizarre fan interaction.
That's just like, that's just from like a person perspective. Like, people out there never do that. Even if you're not a salesperson, like, don't be like, wow, Shannon, I'd love to pay for you to take a flight here to the United States. I'm not going to, but it'd be great if I could. Like, never offer that olive branch if that olive branch is actually rubber.
She was basically saying, you should get this for free, but unfortunately.
Yeah, okay, I get that. It's like, I love you. You were on the show. The show is like big into Survivor. Like, if there was justice in the universe, we're on the same page that you should get this for free. I'm not the person who can give you that justice. So I would just be mad with you about the injustice you are facing at paying for this jacket.
Exactly. And I think it is quite an injustice walking around and seeing all these Survivor things in the shop and I'm still paying for this jacket. I mean, I should have gotten it for free.
I completely agree. Cape Union Mart should say, like, if you ever play on Survivor, like, free patronage for life. I totally think that.
At this very moment, I'm actually wearing a Survivor cap that LaRue gave to me as a gift. So it's the new season's cap. I'm not sure if you guys have one.
No, I mean, LaRue also did ask for my address and I did give it to him and he said that something was coming. I'm currently locked away from my address and I'll be really, really upset if that comes while I'm locked away. I'm locked away also from my husband.
It's like a big festering box of future life and Cape Union Mart gear.
Imagine being like locked away from it in my lockdown in Sydney and I just know there's a box of the sponsor stuff on my kitchen table in Melbourne. That will crush my soul.
It's nice to have this cap because on our season, the logo was different. So they changed the logo last season. So it's nice to have the cap with the new season's logo.
Imagine if LaRue was like, hey, Shannon, give me your address. I would love to send you something. I can't, but it would have been nice.
Yeah, if there was justice in the world, you would get something. I never wear caps. I don't go outside. So that would be why. But even like, I love getting free stuff so much that I'm just like, ooh, I hope I got a cap. Like, I really want that cap now.
I should have actually worn the cap into the K-Way store. I mean, into the Cape Union Mart store. Maybe I would have gotten it for free then.
Oh my God, I love the idea. You walk into Cape Union Mart, you're wearing like all your buffs, your same outfit from the island, you got a cap and you're like, hey, I see you like Survivor. Maybe you didn't notice, but I was on Survivor. Maybe I should get something free. Maybe not something as expensive as a jacket. I get that you don't have that power. Do you have the power for something smaller? Maybe like some Chappies gum? That, you know, could I get that maybe?
Oh, do you think Chappies gets free Chappies whenever he goes into a place?
I haven't heard about Chappies in quite a long time. Like, so I don't think people eat it anymore.
Well, Chappies is gone?
No, I don't think it's gone, but I think just people don't eat it as much anymore, which is,
wow.
I think times have changed.
Our Chappies has supremacy now, is like the one real Chappies left.
Yes, Chappie's, the flesh and blood Chappie's outlives his gum counterpart. Go figure.
I think
it was really cool because in Chappie's, when you open up the wrapping, inside the wrapping, there's these cool facts. There'll always be these did you know type of things. So did you know Nelson Mandela's from South Africa? Random facts like that. So
did you know that Nelson Mandela was from that? Surely you just made that one up. The most famous South African. The worst one ever.
Did you know that South Africa is the southernmost country in Africa?
Put me on the spot there. I couldn't think of a nice
answer. You just made that one up and now we're roasting you. Chappie's didn't do that. Fair enough. Sorry for the roast. Terrible fact though. Give us something. You're a doctor. Give us something medical or something.
It would be like, did you know Tevin was once in a Cape Union mouth store wearing and cap and still did not get any free merchandise?
Yeah. Oh, Tevin, that's such a great fact. I would put it on Chappie's. I wish I could, but I'm not going to. Yeah.
But I don't think the Chappie's would get free Chappie's because, like, if they were to say, like, hey, my name is Chappie's, can I have free Chappie's? They'd be like, show me your license. And he'd be like, covering the date. But he'd also say, like, it would say Francois Chapman, which is his name. Now, if you legally change your name to Dunkaroo Bloom, and you go into a Dunkaroo, is it that a place, Dunkaroo?
No, you don't go into it. There's no Dunkaroo Emporium.
Oh, what is Dunkaroo? I thought that was like a fast food store.
No, Dunkaroos is a popular treat where it was cookies that you would dip into vanilla frosting or chocolate frosting.
It feels like you're making fun of Australians, Dunkaroos. That sounds like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. We have a long history of appropriating Australian culture, right? Between Outback Steakhouse, Crocodile Dundee, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, fine. So if you were to change your name to Dunkaroos, and then you could get free Dunkaroos, I think.
That's what I hope. That's what social media is, right? It'd be like, oh, I changed my name to Wendy. Hey, Wendy's, send me nugs for life.
I mean, you, like, if you're going to have, like, another kid, like, again, Asher, great name. Good job, Angela. I think you should get the chance to name this one. You maybe lean towards what's going to get them the most free goods. Don't do Cape Union Mart because apparently they suck with that. But like, try some other brand and try get free stuff for life.
Can I just name my kid like Money?
No one knows. Cash Bloom. No one is. Cash Bloom ain't bad. This is a name. Now we're thinking.
Well, okay. We already have Ash Bloom, so all I think that would be a little derivative.
Yeah, that's so easy to change though. Make him Casher.
Casher actually isn't too bad the name.
Yes, it is, Mike. You're so bad at naming things. I'm so concerned. Thank God for Angela. Yeah. All right. More things from the sponsors. We only got through one. We just got one through one Cape Union Mart. Seven, I expect one excellent story now for every sponsor, like you not getting a free jacket at Cape Union Mart. Okay, but Mahindra tweeted. They said, who thought that a simple piece of paper could cause so much drama? To that, I say, like, us. Last week, we went on about it ad nauseum. So clearly, they're not listening to the podcast.
Well, now it's like, now are we still an anti-paper podcast, considering everything that happened?
I don't know that I was ever anti-paper. Like, I think it's an interesting thought. Like, I'd be interested to see it. But I think, like, there is also, like, utility to paper. Like, the fact that players can use it, again, like, the fact that it can screw players is kind of interesting to me. The fact that players can use it employs here is also interesting to me. And like, I don't know, I think that like players will lie anyway, as we've seen, and they have paper, and that could screw them in that. But if you take it away, then you're almost leaving it like too free for them. Like, they have to have some constraint, surely.
I don't know. I'm intrigued to see the creativity. But Tevin, what are your thoughts about keeping the papers in the game for everyone to use as receipts?
Yeah, I think I like having the paper there because there's various different ways you can use it. I also think about the fact that when people get tree mail, we often think about ways we can use that as well. A lot of the times you're trying to think, if someone grabs the tree mail and reads it out, you often get to keep these certain things, and it's always going to be a good memory. One day you're going to look back at this and look at this tree mail you took from Survivor. But then you can also use that tree mail, try and make a fake idol, and then wrap it together and just show someone, not the way Theresa did, but show them both object and the paper together. It can be quite convincing for someone who's very paranoid. So I think it is great to have it around.
That's a good point. You know, for all this stuff about Teresa saying, well, I have the paper, I'm intrigued she didn't make or attempt to make a fake idol. I know that not everyone obviously can be like a David Wright and construct something that looks familiar, but I'm intrigued that, you know, she at least did not attempt to corral together some random objects and try to make a fake idol. So when they say like, hey, show us the idol, she's able to pull something out there.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty innovative. Like, it was a pretty, I think, good idea. It definitely worked on at least a couple of people. And I think in the last couple of weeks, like, we've seen how the paper can hurt you. We've seen how it can help you with someone like Chappies who has, like, definitive proof of something. We've seen people try to work with it, like Teresa. Like, there's still a lot of layers there. I'd be interested in the one season without paper. Like, I don't have hard enough of stars about it where I'd be interested to see if it is better, but I'm not sure that it would be. And I just think, like, giving people some constraints and being like, work within it, and then appealing to, like, their base instinct, which is to kind of, like, have trickery and lie anyway, and seeing how they, like, kind of deal with the thing that's in the game. That's interesting to me, rather than the free for all. But again, like, this is all pretty theoretical. I'll take one season where they try it, and then if it's terrible, we just never do it again.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm up for just some experimentation to see how creative can people get with their lies when there's no actual evidence as to whether or not they have something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, LaRue's listening. Maybe we'll go paperless one day. I want to say with Mahindra, they ask a lot of questions and no one is responding. So guys, please go respond to Mahindra. Like, they're trying to engage and it's just kind of like a lot of questions and it's awkward for me personally. But Freshtop had my favorite interaction. Freshtop continues to lead in the Branchula. They had my favorite interaction of the week. So they tweeted saying, also craving a tasty burry roll? Get to your nearest Freshtop for all your ingredients. Then Survivor South Africa account, which has also actually been underratedly good this year, they responded saying, hey, Freshtop, we're rolling with the puns. Then they had an image saying, Vuna were on a roll, a Burrivorce roll, and Freshtop did not respond.
Ooh. That sounds like you and me, Shaden. I step forward with a pun and you're like, all right, moving on.
No, but I'm Pungus. And also, like, the fact that they were like, they put rolling in all caps. I love that as well. Like, they're like, here's the other, I mean, it's the same pun. They loved that pun, clearly. They just, like, went on and on about it. And the fact that Freshtop completely left them on red is a relationship I'm looking forward to continuing to watch.
I love the Survivor South. It's tough to describe in podcast form. I encourage people to check out the Survivor South Africa Twitter account because they really went whole hog this episode where they were posting pictures of Vuna, right, and like putting little speech bubbles above what each person is thinking. Like, they really went in on the contestants this episode.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of social media, like, who's doing the best? Like, I think it's the Survivor South Africa account, but I don't think that counts. I like them trying their best and putting in too many puns and then getting completely nied by Freshtop. I think that's funny. So I'm kind of on board with them. Maybe they should be like a late entry into the... Imagine if Survivor South Africa wins my new brand to stan. Now that would be...
Wow.
If
Tevin was talking about you want to go with the longest lasting one, hopefully Survivor South Africa is the longest lasting brand of them all.
Hopefully. But okay, Tevin, Freshtop. Give up, like, because we're hearing Freshtop is great. Like, we've seen it on the show. People love it. Are you eating also the gas station food?
I think everybody does at some point. I listened to the podcast with Marion on it, and she was talking about how it's one of those things where you're having a drunk night out with friends and so you have to make a stop on your way back home and just eat something. And a lot of people do that. Her story is like 100% accurate. In fact, even after some Survivor reunion shows, we all, after having the after party, etc., we all have to go to certain garages. And, you know, we call it the garage and you guys call it gas stations or petrol stations. But we all basically go there. You go there as a group. Everybody's very drunk. Everybody's kind of picking out on anything you can. And you want to get as much like savory items, pies, whatever you can just to eat and get yourself back to your sober self.
Well, Kevin, I want to say that you are really making people want to apply for the show. Like, apply for Survivor. You won't get free stuff at Cape Union Mart. And also catering is done at gas stations after the event. Like, that's not really painting a good picture.
No, yeah, but we have a really great time when you stop at those garages to pick up stuff. So I think Freshtop is quite a good option.
They are an above average convenience store. Something to think
very
about.
Very much so.
Survivor SA also tweeted, it's only fitting that Techniclock are bringing you photos from this week's Survivor because they are pure fire. To that, I think, like, can Techniclock protect against fire?
Yeah, I don't like saying a sunblock is fire. You know, I feel like it's about staying away from heat sources or keeping yourself protected against it.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like it's good that they're here because there's fire, but they're making sure you don't get burned.
But if it is fire, do you want to rub fire on yourself?
Yeah, I mean, never. Well, I mean, the photos of fire. Fire is involved. I don't know if they're saying that the Techniblock is fire, but I don't want to, like, discourage the Survivor SA account because, again, like, at least they're attempting with the puns. We're roasting it a little bit, but I'm never, you know, anti a pun attempt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you're Pungus.
Fire does represent your life, so I think it's okay to talk about
fire. But then what is Techniblock? If fire represents your life and Techniblock prevents burns, Techniblock, again, like when they do a vote block, it really better be a vote Techniblock, because it works in a lot of different ways strategically, I think.
I guess Techniblock keeps you alive because your fire is still out there, but you're just not getting burnt.
Okay. Don't know if this is making sense to anyone anymore, but it's good that we're working our ways through it. I know there's something there. I know there's something on fire, life, and Techniblock. Someone who has a marketing degree and who it's not 1 a.m. for can work that into good marketing. Well, Future Life. So you say that I should stand Future Life because it's good. I continue to not be into it because they continue to clearly not be watching the show in their tweets. More examples from this week. Don't put your health on the chopping block. Switch to Future Life for a healthy and happy life. Hashtag Survivor SA. Like, how is that a Survivor SA tweet? What even about that is about Survivor?
On the chopping block, maybe.
Yes, in like the loosest of terms, but like what? Like,
yeah. Well, I feel like people don't really use the term on the chopping block unless they're referring to like a reality show. You know, I don't know how many people are using the term on the chopping block in their real life.
Yeah, I mean, if they were watching the show, they should have been like, don't be collateral damage, choose Future Life. Like, at least that would have shown that they were involved in what was going on.
Very true.
So far, from your perspective, Shannon, who is doing the best tweet-wise?
Fresh Stop are trying their best. And that, to me, is endearing. I respect that the Wild Coast side just tweet the show without mentioning their brand at all. They're like the anti-Future Life, which is just tweeting about Future Life with the Survivor SA hashtag. Outsurance, more out puns. They just said, Survivor SA Rewards Challenge kind of reminds us how you can treat yourself after your out bonus payout. Like, I don't... Yeah, that's also nothing to do with Survivor South Africa. So, look, it's dire on the streets without bias routes. I'm not going to lie to you, but, like, Fresh Top continues to lead. No one else's... Brights continues not to be a thing. Maybe a Ghost Hardware store. Like, I have questions across the board about what's going on here.
Jury's still out as to whether Brights Hardware store exists.
Yeah.
Right. There is a Brides not too far from where I live. Okay, look, well,
that,
I think
that was a mystery that we had, Tevin, and now that even that mystery is gone, what is going on this season?
I think Fresh Stop is the best because it has the most variety of things. I mean, you can pick up food, snacks, anything, like some random stuff, flowers probably. So you get the most out of it.
Yeah, but I can't do that. Like, I don't live in South Africa. So I think for me, the best thing is what I can enjoy, and that is whoever's the best on social media. But like, they used to like really like roast the contestants. Now we have to do that because they're all being nice and probably not watching the show, for some of them.
Which they should, because Survivor is one of South Africa's best shows, Survivor South Africa.
Yeah, so good. Why aren't you watching Future Life? Like, why is Survivor South Africa too good for Survivor South Africa? Like, no.
Exactly.
Like
no one is. This show is the biggest, is one of the biggest shows in South Africa. So if no one's tweeting and trying to get on board with this and trying to ride this bandwagon, they're just not doing good enough.
No, okay, well, to clarify, many of them are tweeting. I just don't know if they're tweeting so well. Like Mahindra, trying. Again, questions, but no one's engaging. So I just feel like, I mean, the Jason Jason, who said that? Was that Cape Union Mart? That was good. That was the best roast we've had so far. I just don't know if there's enough. Like Future Life said, the Survivor SA contestant with the best strategy will outwit, outsmart, and outplay the rest. Make switching to Future Life your strategy. Help me out, Future Life. Like, that's just terrible. That's an insult to me, personally.
And that sounds like a tweet they typed a week ago and just prepared it and left it there.
Oh, no,
it very much seems like, they have, like, preloaded a bunch of tweets. It's almost like Rupert tweets, right? This episode, this blind side better not be blindsided with Future Life. You know, just sort of putting vague Survivor terms in there and pressing send.
Okay, I haven't thought about Rupert tweets in so long. I love this. Each of us right now come up with a Future Life Rupert tweet, and if one of us gets close next week, we'll win a prize. It won't be a jacket, Tevin. I wish I could, but I can't. But we'll win a prize. All right, I will start to give you guys time to think. Let me think. Survivor is hard. Make your life easier with Future Life. That's where I'm going with my future. Like, they've already put that into the system, probably. That's where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mike?
Let me think here. How about something along the lines of, like, what's better than protecting yourself with immunity, protecting your future with Future Life?
Also very good. I'm pretty sure they had something like that already, but you know, they're all the same. So very fair. Kevin, do you have a Future Life vague tweet?
Mine was going to be similar to that, but I think I would say, be like Santini and put your hand into the bark and pick up your immunity island and ensure your future life, something like that.
Okay, I can tell you right now, you already lost because these people don't know who Santini is. Like, they don't know that there's bark. They don't know anything about this.
Be like tie-dye red-haired contestant and, yeah, and reach it to the log.
Be like insert woman here and play survive. Yeah, like, I mean, they did say this week something like no immunity up for grabs, which was like the most. I'm like, all right, but I still think like someone on the team, they probably just got the press release being like no immunity this week and then put it in ahead of schedule. Look, I'm on to you, Future Life. You don't know who I am. You don't know what Survivor is. You're clearly not watching the show, but I know. And I'm annoyed about it. That's the end of that very bleak Biostrath Variety Hour. Sorry that it went to that place. It just makes my heart sad, you know?
It's been a tough week. I think
a lot of them are going to change their tweets based on you, Shannon. A lot of them are going to adjust. So let's hope next week up their game. And if not, then we really need to speak to these sponsors.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience, they probably won't change their tweets. They'll probably just pull out of the next season of sponsorship. But I like your enthusiasm and your positivity for what will happen. Okay, I'm going to get to the questions. Philip Testado asks, how would you rate NewsUmber's handling of the public tribal? Did they give away too much information?
That's a good point. Yeah, so we have Nuna sit in on this tribal council, right? And Sean, even just besides the Sean tirade, how do we feel about, you know, it was a great, granted it was a relatively straightforward vote and a blind side of Carla, but do we feel like Tuba gave anything away to Nuna as to what exactly was going on that he didn't already know before?
I mean, other than Sean, I thought they were fine. I thought Wada had like a really good fence sitting answer where they were like, what about like old and new relationships? And like, she can't be like tribe strong, but then she can't also be like old relationships. So she was like, it's kind of different for everyone, which was like such a non-answer, but I respected it because that's what you have to do in that like really hard situation where they're like, who do you like the best out of all of the people here? So I thought they were fine other than, yeah, Sean said too much and was probably a little bit too heavy handed.
And also, well, Chappies, that makes an interesting statement, right? He's like, well, hopefully, you know, the merge comes and I can show people I'm not the dick that you might think I am, is essentially what he told Nuna. So it's interesting to see, like, Sean trying to draw this line and to say, while Chappies is like, no, I think you guys are really going to like me when you get to know me.
Which is what you should do.
I thought he said the word duus, which is a South African word, but I'm not sure now if he actually said dick or duus, but he possibly said duus.
I thought he got bleeped out when he said like, I'm not the blank that I am.
It bleeped out, but the way he kind of went to it's a very South African word. It's like calling someone an idiot or a fool, or not a bad guy. So it's like saying, hopefully that the other tribe will know we're not the duuses that we are. Or the
Why would
duus
they get
that
bleep,
I am?
Though?
Yeah, that's the thing. So it's either he said dick or duus, but it's the way he said it that sounded like he was saying duus.
There's a D in there somewhere.
What I love is like when like kids learn like foreign swear words, they think they're like getting around like any like parental control. That's like us like coming on and learning, what language is that? Afrikaans.
Yeah, and I think it possibly could get bleeped. So
all right.
We'll see.
Mike, you're a duus. Now I can use
it.
I just wanted to use it.
Like it's more like from Cape Town, like, yeah, he's a duus. Yeah, he's a duus. That's the way somebody would say it to you.
We can't pull that off at all. We're not even going to try. But thank you for teaching us that. That's great. Everyone can start using, all the listeners that didn't know, our international listeners, go and call someone a duus today. Duus?
You see how diverse the cast is. I mean, you can even see there was the one time where Tyson and Teresa are speaking a different language. And then you also see Santin. Yeah. A different language at some point. Everybody, because there's 11 official languages, so there's so many different ways you can communicate to people here.
I love that.
I think my favorite part is subtitled Marisha, where like Marisha, whenever she especially gets like caught up in her emotions, just like completely launches into a non-English language. But it's like, it's really fun whenever she does that.
It's not like English is no first language, I'm sure. Like that's must be so hard to have to go play a reality show anyway, and also like not in your first language, but like it's such a multilingual society. We actually got some questions about this because obviously we saw like between Teresa and Tyson, it's something we've seen every season about like how it connects people and maybe how it could be an advantage. But I was like, I feel like probably all of them speak more than one language, right? And that probably connects them all in really different ways. So I mean, definitely could be a disadvantage if you're playing the game in your second language, but there are some ways that it like has really interesting cultural connections, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. It does connect you. If you and someone else do speak the same language, it makes it a lot easier to form a connection, for sure. But because the place is so diverse in general, and people will connect on anything. So if someone else was from, for example, if Rainier was from Secunda and Werner was from Secunda, and they didn't know each other before coming in, that would immediately connect them. Because South Africa, if you're from a similar region, you do generally connect with someone easier.
Interesting. Super interesting. Adam Kay says, does Queen Santini get points for playing the long game and voting out her biggest chizzy competition?
Oh, that's interesting. Now, look, Shannon, you have said in the past that, you know, you will pride anyone who comes in thinking about the chizzy. If you make decisions based on looking at your opposition and saying, I think months down the line, they will get the same amount of chizzy points I do, and therefore I have to get rid of them. Like, is that the ultimate big brain strategy?
I mean, I would absolutely love that, especially if you had like the correct read to be like, Kala looks like he'd, and you'd be right. If you could predict us like, that is absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I mean, she only got 1 point this week, but she definitely pulled further ahead because Kala can't get any more. Brilliant strategy.
I'm really curious to know who her new nemesis is.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's happening on both sides, right? Because Kieran's talking about, it seems to be implied that like Tyson's now on a revenge war path. So it seems like there's going to be a lot of animosity on both tribes now.
Intriguing. Hopefully there's like some sort of a twist involved.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I mean, would you want them to swap anytime soon, or are you like happy for them to keep going in these tribes?
Tribe swaps. I mean, I have so much personal issues with tribe swaps. So I'm not sure. Did I tell you guys about the time when we did the tribe swap and Annelise moves over to the other side? This was just after Martinez leaves the island.
Yeah, how could I forget?
Yeah, Annelise leaves onto the other side, and then she asks me to come across, and I say no. I'll take care of Katinka and PK, and then I'll take care of PK, and then I tell her take Katinka instead. So she takes Katinka across, and that's when Tony comes across to my side. And I always think like that was one of the moments I kind of messed up. I should have went with Annelise because we formed a very close relationship. So for me, tribe swaps into three scare me a little.
I wouldn't be surprised because we're what? So we're at 14 now after this. I'm going to assume, I forget it. I'm assuming they're probably going to merge at 12, I want to say, either 12 or 11. So I think we still have a couple of rounds, and I would not be surprised because we saw this in last season, right? Like they had one more swap back to two for two votes before the merge. I would not be surprised if we get one more swap in the next couple of episodes.
I could see them change it up. I mean, how much more does Tuba have to take? They've been to a lot of tribal councils. They haven't had a night off. They have switched every which way. I'd be interested to see it, but I mean, it doesn't look like it's coming up anytime soon, but I would be interested.
I saw a really interesting actually tweet that sort of was a twist of what if they did a swap back to the original tribes, where if it was like, okay, now you're back to original Zamba and Vuna, what happens then?
Yeah,
and maybe that's why they're keeping track of all their tribes at the bottom of the screen. That's going to be quite interesting.
That would be fascinating. Imagine new Vuna getting back, old Vuna getting back together. It's like, wow, guys. We really screwed up.
It's basically them being like, Santini, what the hell happened?
Yeah. And again, you'd see that scene, you'd see them all get back together, and you'd just see, again, Santini running out of campus, everyone chases after her. I think that would be what they would do. Be like, hi, guys. Just her, like, smiling and waving, then, like, running out School of Rock style, if anyone can, like, picture the scene that I'm talking about. Okay, well, we have to get to these ex interviews because we have two to get to after this extremely long podcast. Last question, John Johnson says, is Nicole the first survivor to ever get her request of a different drink instead of beer?
Yeah, so we didn't talk about this. Love this queen move from Nicole here, basically being like, I don't want a beer. Can you get me a pina colada? Probably helps if there's a resort right around the corner where they can get her drink made to order, but I do love this move.
See, that's the Wild Coast Sun humility. They don't even put their branding into the tweets. And they didn't even get any credit for what is almost definitely their pina colada.
I was thinking about that as well, because I'm not sure. I don't know Warda, but it sounds like a Muslim name. And I was also thinking, like, is she going to take the beer if she wins? But that would be strange. Mm. But yeah.
No, yeah, she did talk about that in the preseason interviews about her faith. I mean, I'm not sure. Like, they usually do provide, like, vegetarian options. Does that count the same as, like, swapping something out like this?
Yeah, because I also thought about that, because Boerewors rolls, I mean, I think Anesu is vegetarian. I'm not sure.
She is. It looks... she's a vegan entrepreneur, I believe. So yeah, I believe that she is. So I don't know would it be like Moana in Australian Survivor 3, Shannon, where it was like she just didn't eat the fish and just like ate the side dishes? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to eat the bun and that's it.
No, I mean, they definitely gave Mo Hope, I think, like veggie burgers when she won burgers. Like, I think they would, if she wanted it, like they could give her like veggie sausages. I don't know if she's like keeping it on the island, but I think that what was like so buzz about what Nicole did, it wasn't like, oh, like I'm underage, I can't drink, or it's a diet requirement. She was just like, I just don't want it, Nico. Do better, Nico. Give me a pina colada.
It reminds me of that challenge from San Juan del Sur, right? Where Natalie's like, okay, you, Jeff, I'll step down if you bring out literally every other reward you've tempted other people with. And he does. So like, I give the all the ups to people calling their shots in these challenges.
Yeah. Even though it was highly likely that Nico would be like, look, I want to give you the pina colada. I can't. That's not in my power. But I do want to give
you. Oh, I would love to give you a pina colada, but unfortunately I can't. You have to pay for it yourself. It comes out of your winnings.
Exactly.
I mean, he basically does that towards the end when they ask him, can we join them and eat? And he's like, let me think about it. No.
Yeah, but he reveled in that. Like, the person who I think was serving you at Cape Newmar, like, she sounds like she's sad about the way this is going. Like, she recognized you. She was starstruck. She liked it. And I don't think she made a very good impression. So I think she's probably upset about that. Whereas like Nico is like, I enjoy hurting you. I like that you can't eat now. And that's the suffering that makes good TV. So.
The nice thing about the Wild Coast Sun being right there is that I think they can accommodate anything. The fact that they're in South Africa makes this so much easier for production to accommodate anyone's needs at this point.
Clearly. What a drink she wanted.
And pina coladas, that's a great way to spend your time in Survivor.
Yeah, they've already been caught in the rain. Probably woken up at midnight. I don't know any of the other lyrics to the song, so I'm going to have to, that's all I know. Do you like, yeah, all right.
Wait, you said waking up at midnight?
Is it making love at midnight?
It's making love at midnight, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I knew that. How often do I sing this song? Do you love waking up? It's like the Kids Bop version of the pina colada.
Yeah, that's an odd. I think that, I don't know. I no offense to this person waking up at midnight. Unless you have a night job, like I might stay away from you as a prospective partner if you're doing that.
That's all. Do you love waking up at midnight? You know, it doesn't sound right as I sing it. No.
Yeah, it's the insomniac version.
Yeah, that's the version that I'm always up at midnight, so I get it.
Yeah, you're up right now at midnight.
Yeah, it's past, well past midnight. Anyways, well, I'm glad that we ended on that note. I'm glad that we got to the point of me getting the song, the words to the Pina Colada song wrong. What is that song called? What is the title?
It's called, I think it's called Getaway, parentheses, the Pina Colada song, okay. If I'm correct.
Well, I'm just showing how little I know about this song. I brought it on myself. No one was asking me that. I did that. Why?
Oh, no, sorry. It's Escape, the Pina Colada song. I went with the synonym there.
And the Kids Bop version is what? Yeah, they would have to not be, would have to be like, do you like juice boxes and getting caught in the rain? Do you like waking up at midnight? That would be.
They get rid of that, though, because I don't think they don't want to encourage kids to even wake up at midnight.
Yeah, do you like waking up in midday from your nap?
that's great. Do you like waking up at midday from your nap?
So, Tevin, you're back on social media. Where can people find you?
Yes. Look, I'm not that active. I basically downloaded it because I started a new podcast. About consciousness. It's called Mind Body Solution. Just recently launched it. So it's pretty much a quest to conquer the mind body problem, which is how is it possible that a psychological system somehow is part of a biological body? What is this mind body connection? So basically, it's about free will, consciousness, psychology, cognitive science, etc. So because of that, I decided to get all my social media back. So you can find me at Dr. Tevinaidu, so DrTevinaidu. And it's pretty much the same on all platforms.
Amazing. And Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world? Everyone's making podcasts. It's great.
I mean, nothing on the highbrow level that Tevin's podcast is. That sounds absolutely incredible. I'm just talking stupidly about reality and scripted TV. Usual stuff, Down the Hatch, The Bloom Files. Something new this week is that obviously the Big Brother 23 cast has dropped. Premiere is coming July 7th. So I released the cast on Parade.com. Also did some interviews with the executive producers about the twists that they are up to. Fortunately, I wasn't able to convince them to do reward versus immunity in Big Brother like I was able to do on Survivor. But still, if you're a Big Brother fan and you want to find out basically everything that's going on with this season, be sure to check that out at Parade.com. Also put out the Love Island cast there. as well, and doing the B&B with Liana Boris a little bit for Big Brother. We're going to be doing things every like 3 to 4 weeks, but we'll be doing a goofy show for the preseason as well. So again, the exact opposite of the very metaphysical stuff that Tevin is talking about, but hopefully satiates your mind in a very different way. It's the Dunkaroos to, I think, the sausage rolls that Tevin's podcast is.
Yeah, and I, actually this week I'll be podcasting too, with not just about Survivor South Africa, because to everyone's surprise, the date of Australian Survivor dropped yesterday. It's coming out on the 18th of July, which when you're listening to this, is probably under 2 weeks away. Ridiculous stuff. So I'm going to be putting out a podcast early this week, like 2 weeks before the 18th of July, that is roughly so, that is going to be like kind of what you need to know so far, everything we know, everything that Channel 10 has put up. And I'm going to do that with Amy Chan, just like get something out there, build some hype and be like, okay, is this serious now? Let's get into it. Where do we stand? So we're going to be doing that. And soon, in a couple of weeks, if you will join me, we'll have 4 Survivor episodes a week to talk about. I will be doing podcasts on both, hopefully exits on all of it, recaps across the board. It's going to be a lot. So I hope everyone will join me on that and then not get completely sick of me, which would also be fair.
That's never something that could happen. But yeah, I'm glad, super glad for this podcast, because Australian Survivor is incredibly unique in its preseason compared to other versions of Survivor. Like with South Africa, we obviously got interviews and knew everything about every one of the 20 people. There's a very good chance we won't know a good handful of people on this Australian Survivor cast until the actual show premieres. So I'm very glad to have this sort of primer from you and Amy as to like what you need to know, what you can discern from social media, videos, etc. Because Australia has a very unique way of tackling the preseason.
Yeah, South Africa is like, here's the whole cast a month before and so much content around it. Australia is like, all right, for every contestant, we will take one drop of your blood. Like, literally, like, give us everything and we'll give you very vague and dramatic things back. So we'll do our best with that. But follow us at AmyBloomType, at Shannon Gates for all of that. Subscribe as well to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed so that you don't miss any of that. So much content coming. We have more content coming tonight. We have 2 exit interviews to get through after all of this recapping madness and also talking about the Pina Colada song somewhere in that. I don't know how that happened. But Tevin, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We had such a good time breaking it down with you, as always. And let's not leave it 2 years next time.
No, definitely. Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure. I cannot wait to chat to you guys again. And I'm really looking forward to the next podcast.
And speaking of, you know, pre-merge gods/goddesses, we'll be joined by a fellow pre-merger next week. Mm. Great Ting Ting from Survivor South Africa Season 7. Shannon, the person that you once compared to yourself, is going to be here to talk with us.
Yes, we'd be dumpings in pairs. We had Rob and Rob, then Marin and Josh. I don't know how they're connected. And now we're doing the Doctors, Kevin and then Ting Ting in a row. Then we'll see where we go.
And we're both Stellenbosch alumni, so we both studied at the same university. So I think it's very fitting.
And apparently you could connect on that a lot in Survivor. We learned so much today. And talked about the Pina Colada song. Have to put that on. Like every time I'm like, hey, we got something done, I'm also like, but we also did that. Okay? So look, if you like waking up at midnight, then I guess you're listening to this podcast. It is very, very long. We still have some exit interviews, but thank you guys, both of you, so much for chatting with me for such a long time. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, as always. Thank you to everyone for listening. And now I'm going to throw it over to Carla and then Teresa. Enjoy. Bye. Carla, I'm so sad that I'm talking to you right now. I feel like you played more game in 5 episodes than most people maybe play in a whole game. So that's impressive, but it's sad to be talking to you now.
Oh, thank you. I'm also sad to be talking to you, to be honest. This is the interview I've been most scared for, to be honest.
Oh, really? Why?
No, just because, like, I thought I was a super fan until I came across you. And I've just got so much like respect for how much, you know, love you have for the game and how in detail and depth, you know, you go into understanding it. So yeah, it's been really cool watching you on Twitter and seeing what you guys are doing. I've just got mad respect for it. So I feel like I'm like fangirling at the moment.
No, well, the feeling is mutual. I mean, as someone who took it upon myself to deem everyone the super fans, firstly, you meet the requirements. Obviously, also you went on Survivor and slayed it through 5 episodes, as we've said, of like epic gameplay. So you are definitely in the club. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so much to ask. It's almost too impossible to get through it all. But I do kind of want to go back early on. Even just the OG Vuna, we saw the alliances. We saw kind of the two sides of it that it became with the swing votes in the middle. From your perception, was that true to how the dynamics were on OG Vuna?
I mean, like, I thought, like, before the vote, there wasn't really any, like, I mean, there were clear partnerships forming, but there was nothing solid in terms of alliances until that vote obviously went through. I suppose when you go to tribal council, when you've just lost a challenge, that's when everyone starts scrambling. That's when you can really start seeing alliances form. In terms of a swing vote, I'm not really sure who you're alluding to.
Yeah, like a Nesu and Thais.
Yeah, oh, okay. So yeah, okay, got you. So there was, in my mind, the only one that was a potential swing vote was a Nesu. Mm-hmm. I was very confident in the alliance that we had with Tyson, Wada, Mike, and myself, and Kieran. So that was a 5. We knew that Paul, Chappies, and Pinty were working together, which was fine. Santi's vote didn't count. Mm-hmm. It technically didn't really matter where Anesu went, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. So it was quite clear just before the tribal. But before we lost the challenge, everything was kind of hunky-dory, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, because we only saw Warada kind of with Anesu until the swap, and then she was, like, so tight with you. So had that been such a cool connection that we hadn't seen, or did it develop?
Yeah. And I forget, to be honest, I sometimes forget, like, what the edit shows and what we actually experienced. But my connection with Warada, even before the tribe swap, was already there. Me and her had a conversation, and she was actually a really pivotal role in getting Pinty out too. One of the mechanics that you don't see behind that move was, and why Wadden and Tyson were so quick to jump ship for us, with me, Mike, and Kieran, was because I managed to convince Wadden that it was her move. I just brought it up in a sly conversation saying, what do you think about Pinty? And then she had a negative response, and I used that to my advantage, saying, well, what do you think about, you know, putting this on your CV as your first blindside? And then her eyes just went ping, ping, ping. Mm-hmm. So she was driving that decision. Well, she thought she was driving that decision, and then she got Tyson on board. She was on board, and I had Kieran and Mike. So it was kind of smooth sailing from there. But that's really where our relationship started, which you don't unfortunately see. So I can understand why it would be quite a spanner after the tribe swap.
So to go to a more negative place, maybe with the relationships, like, but with you and Mike and Warada, there seemed to be animosity to, like, the Paul, the Pinty, the Chappy side, no love lost. Why do you think that it was such a split there just socially?
Socially, it all happened because of the tribe swap. I mean, I kind of kept my distance from Chappies in the beginning. I knew it wasn't someone that I'm a very big energy person. So I was attracted to the energy, and that was the energy that I wanted to play with. I know that sounds really like gobbledygook, but that's just how I based my instincts off. So I knew Chappies was someone that I didn't really want to play with. But the rift, and Paul actually tried to play with. I've tried to play with him a couple of times. I thought he would just be really fun to play with, but I was very wrong about that. Anyway, I think the rift really started when they were on the wrong side of that vote in the Pinty vote. And then, you know, just luck happened that I landed on the same tribe with them. And there was no way that, you know, they were going to rebuild the trust with Mike Wadada and I. It was easier for them to start from scratch with the new Zamba. And I can't blame that strategy, because I tried to do that too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the tribe swap really cemented that rift between the two groups.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, but it seems like you've kind of answered it, of whether you think, like, because we even asked this of Mike Laws when we spoke to him, like, do you think you made it any worse by trying to go against him at the swap? Or do you think it was just completely done and you were just trying your best with, like, an undoable situation?
No, I mean, like, to be honest, like, why I was so pissed off was because before the tribe swap, you know, the blind swap had just happened. We wake up in the morning, and then Paul and Chappies are preaching Vuna strong. So there's a couple of references in some of the episodes where I'm like, you guys were actually the ones, you know, who told us if there were going to be a tribe swap in any case that we need to stay Vuna strong. And as soon as that situation happened, they were the ones who were speaking immediately to the new Zamba. So I saw this and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, so I'm seeing you guys having this conversation after you've just preached Vuna strong. And in no way, in no universe in my head, someone who's on the wrong side of the vote and you get the opportunity to play with new players is going to choose the people who backstabbed you in the first place, or didn't trust you in the first place to let you in on the vote. it was never going to happen. I knew it was never going to happen. I don't think I caused anything there. You'll see there's that one scene where I look like I'm going a bit crazy, cuckoo, or Mike describes me as loco. It's because I was trying to explain to him. I was like, Mike, dude, there's no way in hell that these dudes are going to work with us. In no game would they want to play with us. And he was trying to flip them back. And I was like, cuz, that's where we disagreed on that strategy. And yeah, ultimately they didn't want to work with us. So
Yeah. I mean, and then cause your whole game, it flipped back and forth for every vote, actually kind of unbelievable when you look at it. So what do you attribute getting back with the swing votes for the Paul vote? Like, was that an anti-Paul thing? Do you think you were doing good work there to get back in, you know, maybe some stuff we didn't even get to see and some stuff we did see to win that vote?
I mean, I think there was, as you said, there's a lot of things, the dynamics that go on in the back. I think a core one was Sean. So I was actually working quite closely with Sean. And what Sean managed to do, he actually, so remember those chocolate bars that were stolen that Anela stole?
Yeah.
So Sean, to keep me safe again and to keep, me and Wanda in the game, he actually said that the chocolate bars were stolen by Paul, which was another big coffin, nail in his coffin in terms of, we can see this guy eating us out of, house and home or lack of house and also lack of a home. Eating us out of house and home, and then also on top of that, stealing potential rewards from us. That was a huge nail in his coffin, and I rode that hard. I was just like, anything to get the vote off Wanda or I was going to antagonize. Every time that Paul was eating, I would point it out. I'd be like, hey, are we really going to, let this carry on happening? And then, so there was one, I can't remember who it was, who said, we need to keep the tribe strong. And I was like, guys, we're losing with strength. It doesn't matter if how strong our players are, but if we're not unified and then there's animosity in the tribe, if people are, disrespecting the food source out of everything, there's no way we're gonna be able to progress in the game as a tribe. So lots of little different dynamics. I hope that answers your question too.
Definitely one thing we definitely saw in the episode about those dynamics was the choice to give up and go. The only person who's done it in 5 episodes so far. Mm-hmm. And in some of your day after videos, you're saying that, on a strategic level, you kind of regret it. You should have done the self-interested thing. Mm-hmm. Is that still how you look at it now?
No. So I've thought about that quite intensely. The way I saw it, my tribe had told me to keep my vote. I was on the bottom of this alliance. Clearly, my mic had just gone home. The only way that I could prove trust was if I did something trustworthy and loyal. If I had gone back there with, an immunity island necklace and an advantage, I would have lost the trust. And I would have still put a target on my back by having a potential advantage. So I still would have been a target, because why would they keep someone around who has potentially, won something that's going to get them further in the game? So I think ultimately I don't regret that decision at all. In hindsight, when I went on my exit interview, I thought that maybe was a regret, but then I think I backtracked because I was like, actually, no, I think, veering away from my integrity and diverting from someone who I actually truly am would have hurt me long term emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that I stuck with my gut and was a woman of my word and said that I was going to do and actually played that forward.
Were you aware of all of the mechanisms that would come out of it? The fact that Nico would kind of out the fact that tribal, that you couldn't play your immunity necklace, for example, and that would kind of out the lie, or did you not know exactly how that would go?
So honestly, there were so many twists and turns in this game that I kind of, there was like so many things getting thrown at you on every level that I knew obviously certain people were aware of the rules of Immunity Island, but I also banked on the fact that those rules could change. In no way did they tell us that this is exactly concrete, this is how the game's going to go. So with that vote and bloat lie, I thought that I would ride on the fact that, there is uncertainty in this game and there's nothing is set in stone until you know, Nico does tell you what the rules are. So I use that to my advantage just to keep the vote off me, you know, just in case these people who, you know, voted Mike off do decide to flip. I'd rather them think I'm safe than, you know, go back and say, oh no, I'm not safe, but I'm still going to keep my vote, you know, have a little bit of fun with it. Nico saying what he said, I was very taken aback, actually, in tribal. I didn't expect him to out me as soon as he did. But again, it had happened before, him explaining the rules. But I think he could have rode with me a little bit on that one, if you know what I mean. I think you can see the shock on my face. I'm like, uh-oh. And then I just decided not to play. So,
yeah. Yeah, a lot going on with that one. And then as is, I guess, the Kyle away for it to flip back in this pattern that it's gone. Like, what do you attribute to that to now? Like, are there any particular betrayals or people where it flipped back onto you?
So I think that ultimately the vote and gloat thing did backfire in my face. And the reason why, you know, obviously Chappies knew the rules of the game, but I actually was pretty convincing in that lie, to the point where the only reason why they knew that I was lying is because I told Santi that I lied. And I, at that point, I trusted Santi. So this is going back to episode 4. I trusted Santi because she was playing double agent so beautifully that I knew she was playing double agent, but I still trusted her. And I was like, oh, did you believe my lie? And then she was the one who outed me to Chappies. And I think you'll see in episode 5 when Santi's like, you know, if she can lie so well to my face and I believe it, then that's someone that I can't, you know, that I can't play with. I also think, why did it flip to me instead of Chappies? In terms of my social game, I do think it was slightly stronger than Chappies in terms of my connections on the other side. I personally couldn't see any reason why they would take a physical threat to merge. But I didn't think that I was playing such an outward social game that they would want to take that social and strategic threat out before a before a physical threat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. Look, I think we're running out of time, but as I, you know, 39 days in 5 episodes, we could talk about this probably for hours, but thank you so much for coming on and for your game. And I know there's a lot of devastated viewers and listeners out there right now because you know, you slayed it for 5 episodes and we're very sorry to see you go.
Oh, thanks, Shannon. I'm sorry if I was a bit starstruck and jumping over my answers, but hopefully we'll chat again. And yes, I appreciate everything you do. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Tarifa, thank you for coming on RHAP. I mean, I just said this to Kyla, so it might sound disingenuous, but like, I'm really devastated to lose the both of you. Like, I'm so sad about this whole week. I'm like in mourning.
Don't worry. I believe you.
You should. I'm sad.
I believe you because you were very kind and generous towards the entire cast in the pre-interview. So I totally get that.
I mean, yeah, but you were a particular fave. I mean, you're a fan of the show as well. And I love the way that you think about the game. So it's a heartbreaker, but I want to get into a bit of what we did and didn't see on the show. And to me, it seemed like you were on the back foot from day dot. Like we saw, to me, it seemed like quite an initial alienation. Would you say that was the case? And if so, why do you think that was?
I was below the bottom from day zero, actually. I think it's literally just one of those things where it's the luck of the draw, Shannon, where it can happen that the last people that you would ever chill with are the people you end up with on the tribe. So
yeah,
and I think that's part of the beauty of the game, is that seeing people have to work their way around that socially. Unfortunately for me, it just never happened.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't get to see, as I said, really much of the relationships. Who would you say were your closest relationships, even within like those difficulties?
My closest relationship pre-swap was probably Rene. He's just a very kind person. It's one of those, we had a weird conversation, I think on day 5 or 6, where we were talking about IPL and discovered that we're both like cricket fans, and then talked cricket for a good while, and then the relationship just developed from there. And that's literally just, all a person needs to get an in. But I think for me, for the greater part of the first half of the game, for me, I had just been starved of that social interaction one-on-one with the people on my tribe.
Would you say that there was anyone you had animosity with, or was it just kind of that lack of really any relationship?
No, it wasn't any real animosity. I don't think so, Shannon. I just think it's just one of those scenarios where you meet people where you're on completely two different planets, and that's literally it. So once that had happened for me, and it's one or two people and they're in the dominant group, then you become a liability just by association. So it becomes a risk to anybody's game, really, to be seen to be having any sort of strategy with you in that context. So I totally understand it from a game-playing perspective.
Then obviously as well, on top of that, you go to Immunity Island and you lose your vote. And how do you feel that not having that vote, do you feel that contributed as well in terms of trying to get back in but not having that power?
The thing about it is that nobody knew that I had lost my vote in the next tribal council, because obviously knowing that you're at the bottom, there was no way I was going to ever let that slip out with people who were eager from the get-go to let go of me. So it was just always going to be something quite tricky to navigate around, I think. But I don't think in the context, certainly of the original Zamba tribe, it would have made any much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, at least you got to see Immunity Island, even though maybe it brought some curses with it.
Right! And
yeah, like, did you know that Nico was going to say that you couldn't vote that night when you came into tribal council? Were you unaware of that, the first tribal
council? The thing about it is that I wasn't aware of it. That it was going to be that way, but it played perfectly into, you know, post-tribal, when I got back to camp and people asked me what had happened, I was actually able to tell them the story in its entirety, and they just assumed when I said that, so I lost my vote because I lost the challenge, they just assumed that it meant that I lost my vote for that particular tribal council and not for the following one. So it kind of worked out quite well.
Yeah, that's the thing about losing two votes. It's like when you say it, they don't know you've lost another vote. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
So to the extent that at some point, I mean, there was a lot of speculation around whether or not I had won or lost at Immunity Island, because I made sure that I spent a lot of time looking for idols. I know you don't get to see this on screen. So it fueled a lot of speculation about whether or not I had actually lost, and then eventually about whether or not I had an idol. So literally within the space of one day, I had four or five different people coming to me and asking me if I had an idol. And that was just so random. And the best thing about it was that I could give sort of non-definitive answers around it and just allow them to speculate. So it's the one thing that allowed me to play that up eventually when I could pretend to have an idol.
Yeah, because they probably would have started to know a little bit more about Immunity Island and the fact that everyone who stays loses their vote, so they must have been confused about it. And then probably had more suspicions.
That's exactly it. Because once the swap happened, Santini had gone back to a tribe and told everyone everything. So they had immediately figured out that what I had told them was not the truth, which further fueled the idol speculation.
Right. That makes sense.
Which is obviously what you want if you don't have any protection.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. So getting to the swap, what were the dynamics there? Was there any chance at an insurgency? I mean, from an edit perspective, we were like, there are outsiders here. You've got three new people, and then Kian seemed on the outs. She got votes, and you and even Dino seemed a little on the outs, but then it seemed in the episode that that was not to be.
The chance of an insurgency was really, I think, because I got quite close to Anesu from the get-go at the beginning of the swap, and we obviously toyed around with a whole lot of ideas. The one being, she's the one person who I actually told that didn't have a vote at the next tribal council. So the idea was that if we were going to have a split, find out who they would split it to, and that person would then, we'd play the idol with the, for the person with the three votes, and then them three would vote for someone else. And I was pretty kind of open about the fact that I didn't care who the alternative target was, as long as it wasn't Ranir, so and as long as it was original Zamba. So that was sort of what the plan was, and which is why, you know, a lot of the stuff, once she left and we were going to tribal council, like, it was quite confusing for me why Tyson felt that I had thrown him under the bus, when it was, from my understanding, it was just purely miscommunication, and the fact that, I suppose, Anesu was the glue that held the guys and I together.
Right.
So out of that equation, we obviously couldn't maintain the relationship on our own.
Yeah, did you realize at the time, because I think in your day after videos, you said that that was the main blind side for you, that Tyson and Kieran had turned. Like, did you not realize at the time that that had been such a split for them in, like, the later parts of that episode?
I think for me, I realized that they had turned once Kieran couldn't look me in the eye by the end of the day. So I realized that there was something up there. And so, but I thought that, I genuinely thought that the reason they had done that was because they wanted to ingratiate themselves with the tribe. It just, yeah, I suppose it's one of those things that I didn't think made sense to me. If you're going to vote me off and you were the alternative target to me, it means the next time the tribe goes to tribal council, you are the target type of thing. So that was sort of the reasoning in my head as to why I didn't think that they would do that. But I thought that they wanted to, you know, gamble on trying to ingratiate themselves with the tribe.
So going into that tribal council, what did you think would happen? Because you say, even say when you put up your no vote that you went out swinging, did you just think you'd get the majority of the votes and you didn't know that maybe Tyson would play an idol?
Yeah. I literally thought everyone was going to vote for me, actually.
Okay.
So I was quite surprised that the Zamba original kind of did the whole split vote thing. Because, like I said, once I realized that that Kieran and Tyson had turned, there was no reason for them not to come out to the rest of the tribe and kind of say, you know, we know she doesn't have an idol. Let's just make it a solid 8-block vote. So I think that was the thing.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the fake idol made things worse? Like, do you think that there was a chance they could have gone to the Tyson and Kieran way and that just made it more confusing and put people's votes on you? Or do you think that, like, you were the target from the beginning, people were leading the charge, and there was just nothing that you could do?
I think I was the target from the beginning. Certainly, yeah, the ladies never minced their words around that from day one at original Zamba. So my thing is, and as I said, when I had the conversation with Anesu, it was like, let's just get them to target the person who has the idol, and then go for an alternative person. That way we don't have to kind of have the whole, let them target you and I'll give you the idol, because if that were me in Tyson's shoes, I definitely wouldn't play an idol for anyone else. So it was just not a risk I was prepared to make.
Was part of you hoping when Anesu went to Immunity Island that she would choose to give up and come back if her vote had been so important? Or did you kind of respect the fact that in that difficult situation she was going to stay?
Anesu is an absolute sweetheart, and such a good player of the game. I had no doubt in my mind that she would slit my throat if it meant her longevity in the game was sustained. And that's the beauty of it, is that I have such respect for her for being able to do that. It takes a very advanced player to be able to do that. I realized it because one of the conversations we did have, which were also not on screen, was she talked to me through that entire Pinty vote. So the minute I understood that and I realized the nature of their relationship and how close they were and how she could do that so easily to her, it made me realize that I was no different.
Yes, definitely a lethal player for sure. Just going back to the idol play, so what was, like, again, desperate situation, what was your ultimate goal, I guess, in telling people? Were you just trying to make them, as you said, like Dino on the show, scared of being collateral damage and just kind of trying to spook them with that?
That was the plan for me. I was actually hoping that Dino would run around and tell Zamba 1.0, and then because of that, they would have to change their plan and target someone else. Unfortunately, it didn't play out that well because, shocker, Dino kept his mouth shut, which I really didn't expect. I didn't expect it because I thought that, faced with the reality of his game being in danger, he would have to do the natural instinct would come into play, but it didn't happen. So a miscalculation on my part, but it didn't work out, eh?
Yeah, Dino, you had one job, to tell everyone everything. I don't know. Yeah, it's meant to spill the beans, but actually keeps the secret is not the thing to do. We don't have a lot of time, but I guess on a last question I'd want to ask, like, you know, fan to fan, I think a lot of people see themselves in you playing and your love of the game and everything like that. It looked dire, and I think that hurt a lot of our hearts for a lot of it, as we said, you being on the back foot from the beginning. But, like, what would you say was your highlight of the experience just as a fan going out there?
Oh, my goodness. The highlight was really getting to know some amazing people, hey? Like I said, getting to watch someone like Renier and Anesu play was quite extraordinary for me. I thought I was a super fan until I went out there and you realize, sure, these super fans put this super fan to shame. And I'm the type of person who appreciates the nuances of the game and the skill that it requires to sort of navigate your way through that. And to at least have experienced one or two people playing it to a T was something beautiful to observe. It was like an out-of-body experience for me. So it's a pity that I couldn't be able to duplicate that and do that in my own game. But I can say I played with some of the best.
Well, yeah, I mean, we love watching you play. And you're not even the first person tonight who said to me, I thought I was a super fan until, I think I'm not even helping in contributing to the whole insecurity around super fandom. So I'm probably going to put a bit of a stop to that. Everyone is a super
fan. Right, Shannon, everyone's earned it. It's completely bizarre. It's one of those things that for me, to be honest, had I had the sort of trajectory where I ended up like a Jean-Michel, where I'd hit the merge, I really think that the game would have picked up for me, because that was my aim from the get-go. Just make the merge and then you're sort of safe. But the early game was always going to be the difficult one for me, and realize the extent to which it would be difficult. But so it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were sorry to watch that, but we did love watching you. Loved you from the preseason. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast as well. It's been such a joy to talk to you.
Scramble.
Yeah. We enjoyed hoping. I mean, I will say that, like, when you got sent to Immunity Island in that first episode and I knew you were safe, like, you can ask my husband, I screamed in celebration. So, look, we got our moments of victory through it all.
Yes, no. And I did have fun pre-tribal council driving everyone mad. That was that was like quite a bit of a fun thing for me to do, because it was like, you guys think I am an idol and now you have to try and work around it.
Yeah, no, we had our fun. I mean, that's what's important. But thank you so much for coming on and have a great day. Shannon. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Bye.
All right. Ciao.
There you have it, everyone. A recap, 2x interviews. I really hope you enjoyed it all. And if you are here well over 3 hours into this, then I really hope you're enjoying it. Because otherwise, if you're not enjoying all of that, maybe find something else to do. I know it's a lot. We're enjoying doing it. And we really, really appreciate you being here every week, especially for those of you who have made it to my final send-off. I often wonder, is anyone listening to this? Let me know. Let me know if you get here at this point, well over 3 hours into the content. I really do appreciate it. Anyone who's checking it out, we appreciate you so much. And we will see you next week for week 6. Until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekel.
Aldi. Million rubli.
Tribe spoke.
From the adventure of a life.